But then, they, in essence, they got used to it. So they're actually using our psychology against us. And then they can also, like you said, refinery fire, they can use an excuse. I think what you're saying, Tim, correct me if I'm wrong, is that if there's a refinery fire, it's not so much that it will cut the capacity, but they can use that as an excuse to have less capacity in the future and keep prices high.
Nope. Here's the thing.
You're missing it.
It's actually a physical shortage, because if they got together like they did in the old days in the smoke filled room and got caught, they're like OPEC today. They withheld the refinery capacity.
This is the Quality News Network. A federal appeals court ruled today against the Bush administration in a case involving the detention of a U.S. resident accused of being an Al-Qaeda agent. The court ordered his release. The man had not been charged and was being held in solitary confinement at a military facility since 2003. The Senate is expected to vote today on whether to hold formal debate on a resolution of no confidence in Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez in connection with the controversy over the 8 fired U.S. attorneys last year. The White House dismisses the symbolic vote as a waste of time. President Bush said it won't determine who serves in his government. President Bush wrapped up his 8-day trip to Europe with a stop in Bulgaria. Prior to that, he was greeted by cheering supporters in Albania. The president returns to Washington this evening. Tomorrow he will go to Capitol Hill to revive the stalled immigration bill. He vowed that the legislation will pass, saying, quote, "I'll see you at the bill signing." In Baghdad, a suicide car bomb blast Sunday collapsed a major highway overpass. 3 U.S. troops were killed and 6 were wounded. Democratic Senator Joseph Lieberman says the U.S. should target specific military camps in Iran to stop the country from training fighters the U.S. military says are battling in Iraq. Israeli space officials announced today they have successfully launched an advanced spy satellite into orbit. It is expected to be used for collecting intelligence on Iran and other regional enemies. The Israelis will share their data with the U.S. 2 NASA astronauts have begun the first spacewalk of the Atlantis mission today. Earlier today, there was a small glitch with 4 spinning gyroscopes, which caused about an hour delay in the start of the spacewalk. 2 Red Cross workers were killed in Lebanon today near a Palestinian refugee camp. They were in their vehicles when they were struck by a mortar shell, which reportedly came from Fatah Islamic militants who were holed up inside. Parts of southern Bangladesh have been hit by monsoon rains, which triggered deadly mudslides. At least 67 people have been killed after hillside slums were washed away. U2 rock star Bono will invest $30 million to pressure the 2008 political candidates to focus on his global anti-poverty campaign. The One Vote 08 effort will urge fighting disease and poverty globally and improving water and education. This is the Quality News Network.
Hi, I'm George Lopez. In comedy, there are some things you can count on to get a smile. In healthcare, Shriners Hospitals for Children have a proud tradition of bringing smiles to kids with orthopedic burn and spinal cord problems. The Shriners offer world-class medical care to children absolutely without charge. At all 22 Shriners Hospitals, innovative research and teaching programs are combined with specialized pediatric services for one purpose, to improve the lives of children. For more information, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, having fun and helping kids.
There was this man who almost learned to walk at a rehab center that almost got built by people who almost gave, almost gave. How good is almost giving? About as good as almost walking. As generous a nation as we are, sometimes instead of giving, we almost give. Don't almost give. Give. Visit our website at don'talmostgive.org. A message from the Ad Council.
Democratic Senator Tim Johnson, who underwent brain surgery in December, will soon resume his duties, according to his doctor. He has been undergoing physical and mental rehabilitation since then. A drug commonly used to treat high blood pressure could be effective against the progression of Parkinson's disease. Tests on mice at Northwestern University showed rejuvenation in dying brain neurons with the treatment. Johns Hopkins University researchers say that by 2050, worldwide, the number of people with Alzheimer's disease will quadruple. That means 1 in 85 people will suffer from the brain-wasting disease. Currently, more than 26 million people have Alzheimer's. In May, China's trade surplus went up to $22.5 billion, the third highest monthly level on record. Chinese exports for the month were $94 billion. A Chinese reporter sentenced to prison for a decade has joined a lawsuit against Yahoo, claiming the search engine turned information over to authorities, leading to his arrest. Nationwide, in the past 3 weeks, the average price for a gallon of unleaded gasoline has fallen 7 cents, down to $3.11 a gallon. Light sweet crude is trading at $65.97 a barrel. And on Wall Street, at the close today, the Dow was up 1 point, NASDAQ was down 1 point, and the S&P 500 up one. There's always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramoff.
Okay, don't you,
South America.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Six and a half minutes past the hour. It's Monday. I'm Bob Kincaid. Been away from the microphone, traveling around this great land of ours, and I'm awfully glad to be back. Maybe a little bit later in the program, we'll talk a little bit about the state of... Okay, nobody does this. I did this. The state of passenger rail in America. I have this moral aversion to participating in the take your shoes off and let us inspect your toenails, and gee, you've got blonde hair and blue eyes and you're all liberal and progressive and that makes you dangerous, Mr. Kincaid, security systems at the airports that, you know, aren't doing anything to protect anybody from nothing. So we took the train. And we'll talk about that here in a little bit. But we've got a quite the heady lineup for you this evening. Here in just a little bit, we will be joined by author and, frankly, the premier investigative journalist in this country, Greg Palast. His new paperback version of Armed Madhouse is out with some extra information in it that you will find quite useful. And we'll talk about that and some of the other work that Greg has been doing of late just in a matter of a very few moments. Also this evening, we'll be talking with Sansara Taylor from World Can't Wait, Drive Out the Bush Regime. And then at the top of the next hour, we'll be talking with radio talk show host from the Southern California area, Bree Walker. Ms. Walker recently purchased Cindy Sheehan's Camp Casey property in order to keep it from being purchased by some right-wing, pro-war, bloodthirsty Bushista outfit, and she's going to make a peace memorial of it. So all of that is on tap, as well as your conversation, the restoration of the American discussion, as we like to think of it here at the Horn. Let's check now, though, to see if Greg Palast is with us. Greg, good evening. Thank you so much for taking time to join us. Okay. Greg is, he was on another call there, so we should have him here in a couple of moments. This is how we operate. This conversation was actually scheduled for last week, but Greg had to fly back to London for a BBC investigative report. You know, he works for the BBC. They actually do some journalism. You can actually find out news about the United States that you can't find out, like, say, if you watch Katie Couric. Katie Couric delivered, if you recall, an encomium, a jeremiad, if you will, saying that the news was being polluted by fluff and garbage, and that generally that sort of high-toned, snooty approach that old, the mainstream journal, so fake journalism. takes these days toward anything that's not them. And then proceeded to turn around Friday. Must have been just absolutely astonishing on the network news to see, you know, the story of Peter Pace, the fairly inept chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, booted. The Secretary of Defense stated that he would not renominate Peter Pace as chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, in essence giving him sacking him. And in the middle of reporting that story, most of the networks broke away to report what? The slow-moving L.A. car chase? It wasn't even a chase, just the surrender of Paris Hilton? The mind boggles. So, we'll be going to Greg Palast here presently. About 10.5 minutes after the hour, that if there was ever a moment, or if there will be a moment in the future, when historians or whatever will look back at the state of what is called a free press in the United States and wonder when it really and truly and honestly, you know, no two ways about it, jumped the shark, Friday may very well be that benchmark. The war in Iraq is going horribly. It's a bloodbath. It's a screw-up. The Iraqi parliament, by the way, while I was, you know, I turned my head for 1 minute and the world goes to caca. The Iraqi parliament passed a resolution saying, America, get the hell out of our country. Did Katie Couric have time for that? No, she had time for the Paris Hilton story. And this is not pile on Paris night. I absolutely refuse to participate in that kind of conduct. I'm going to stay true to my my own beliefs, my own feelings about things like the criminal justice system, things like the punishment of substance offenders. Offenders. Jesus, they've got me using the language, you know. I don't think Paris Hilton belongs in jail. I don't think drug addicts belong in jail. I think they belong in treatment. They deserve to have an opportunity to get clean. But no, we have a punishment fetish in this country, so we're going to make sure that Paris gets hers. It's just, I'm I've caught liberals doing it. You know, she needs to go to jail. She needs to serve her debt to society. My God, she violated her probation. I don't buy it. I don't buy it at all. I think, okay, she's a multimillionaireess. That doesn't mean that her life is particularly good. She is an idiot. She doesn't even have a high school education. Sure, the money would be fun, but and I guess she enjoys being ogled by the cameras and whatnot, and that makes for a good life. I don't see it. To my mind, she is to be pitied. She is pathetic. I don't know, maybe you disagree. But remember, the criminal justice system exists in this country for one or two or three purposes. It's to manage the morons and to protect the money. That's all. Most of the defined crimes that we have in this country are largely thrown into one general category called criminal stupidity. Or so it would seem. So, I don't know. Then there's Scooter. Now, he committed a crime, and he deserves a lot more than any 30 stinking months for the offense. It's not. I don't know. Somehow Paris Hilton getting loaded and getting behind the wheel is a little bit different than Scooter Libby trying to subvert the constitutional form of government and outing a secret agent. Where's the underlying crime, the right-wingers say? Well, everything he ever did, every day that he went to work. Now, I was at a website earlier today where that was talking about the sentencing process. And I know this is a little bit of an old story, but my God, I sat down and took the time today to read some of this stuff. I found a link to the PDF file of all the letters written on behalf of Scooter Libby and in opposition to Scooter Libby to Judge Walton. I understand. And it was just it was just astonishing. God, 300 or so pages of letters on behalf of Scooter Libby written to Judge Reggie B. Walton. And from, let's see, the first one was from Kenneth Edelman. You know, one of the architects of the Iraq War. Scooter Libby's a great guy. You know, brother. But I got one sitting here in front of you that'll curl your hair. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, well, I hope things fall into place as they should be. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. You're listening to The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
It's destroying him slowly, cause he does not even know me, even though he sees me everywhere he goes. So he just tortures himself, he has no fortune and wealth, so he extorts someone else to get his dough. And now he's acting like a bully, so he tries to push and pull me, but he knows that he can't fool me, so he's mad. He has no choice but to scream and raise his voice up at me, cause it annoys him to see that I ain't scared. You ain't no motherfucking bully, now you bounce on the motherfucking bully.
Brought to you by the Republican National Committee, George W. Bush, Maximum Decider. Next time you see a stranger on a plane, a stranger with those swarthy looks we all know, ask yourself, shouldn't I be afraid? Maybe he wants to kill me. Maybe he hates us for our freedom. Fear, it's what's for dinner.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical, you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Clyde, Wally, and Dookie are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. So stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. Your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 3/4. All you have to do is believe. And believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
The difference between what I do on my show and what all the right-wing types do on their shows is very simple. I'm not going to lie to you. That doesn't mean you're going to agree with me about everything or that you're going to like hearing everything I have to say, but I will guarantee you that when I say something on my show, I say it because I mean it and I believe it, and I'm not just saying it to get you riled up and to boost my ratings. No potty mouth, no trash talking, no BS, just the straight truth as I see it, because the lies may sound good for a while, but the truth is there forever. It's not always pleasant, it's not always nice, sometimes it's hard to see through all the crap, but it's there. And that's what you're going to get from me, and that's why you should listen to my show. The Cup of Joe Radio Show, Mondays and Fridays from noon to 2 Eastern Standard Time on the Head On Radio Network.
Are you ready?
Are you ready?
Yeah. Hello to Doug. It's Fergie.
If you ain't got no money, take your broke ass home.
If you ain't got no money, take your broke ass home.
I wonder what that sound that song would sound like if they'd taken the train. God almighty, the state of passenger rail in this country is horrifying, but I'll talk about that later. Now, I was talking about the letters written on behalf of Scooter Libby, and frankly, you know, okay, I've been a little busy. I missed these. if you can just look for them, you'll find them. You're better at this internet searching than I am. There are Kenneth Adelman, one of the architects of the Iraq War, one of those will be greeted as liberators types. Scooter Libby is possibly the finest person I know. He would not say poopy if he had a mouthful. And Admiral Lopez, a West Virginian who rose through the ranks and served in every aspect of the United States Navy, both enlisted and in the officer corps, writing this letter talking about what a great guy Scooter Libby is. On and on and on and on. I mean, log rolling of every way, shape, form, and fashion. Simply... I mean, you can tell what kind of a network's out there that the call went out from the White House, write letters in support of Scooter Libby. Really. But the one that just slew me, the one that just, it was like bamboo under the fingernails. Listen to this. Dear Judge Walton, thank you for considering the thoughts of Scooter and Harriet Libby's many friends. Though I have worked in Washington politics for over 25 years for Presidents Reagan and George Herbert Walker Bush, and while I knew Scooter Libby by his highly regarded reputation, I did not cross paths with him until I joined Dick Cheney's staff as assistant to President George W. Bush and counselor to the Vice President. As Chief of Staff, Scooter was my superior, but given our similar life circumstances, we very quickly became friends. Neither Scooter nor I joined the administration as a career enhancement, but because we believed in public service. Our service put great strains on our respective families, especially following the events of 9/11, which required not only long but also intense and often off-site work at the so-called undisclosed secure locations. Our families bonded, and our friendships deepened. I mean, if you go through this PDF file, there's another letter in there about Scooter coming over and jumping on the trampoline with her children. You likely have learned much through these letters regarding Scooter's unique service, his superior intellect, unmatched work ethic, and quiet leadership in government. I would like to address his family and personal values, though my husband shares neither political nor philosophical views with Scooter. He has a deep respect for his intellect, his integrity, and joins me in the sentiments expressed here. Oh, brother. One of my many enduring and endearing memories of Scooter is of his universal love of families. While on one of our early undisclosed location work trips, which were always driven by unfolding threatening events and were therefore unscheduled and unanticipated by our families and us, coincided with Halloween, which I am sure you know is the favorite event of most children's lives. Really? I thought that was Christmas. The Cheney grandchildren were required to accompany us on this particular trip, yanked out of school and away from their much-awaited night of trick-or-treating. Oh, my God, this is worse than the little match girl. Their disappointment, being trapped in the desolate, nothing-to-do location, was heartbreaking, as was our own, missing our small children that night. While I was working up a pretty annoying whine, Scooter flew into action, finding treats, creating costumes, and arranging an ad hoc trick-or-treat and Halloween games for the kids. Okay, kids, everybody put the blindfolds on, and we're going to play Guess the Secret Agent. This was no small undertaking, given our removed location and minimal resources. It took hours and a very creative effort on his part, and when the little ones finally trotted off to bed happy, Jesus, it sounds like Cindy Lou Who, and full of candy and stories, Scooter went back to work, as was always the case, late into the night, hard at work, screwing his political rivals. Sorry, I added that part. On the many occasions our children were forced to accompany Scooter and I on location with the Vice President, Scooter always arranged to have our work and schedules revolve around the kids. He always planned ahead and discovered the most fun and interesting activities for all of them. To this day, whenever I talk to my girls about attending any White House event, they always ask, "Is Mr. Scooter going to be there?" My lifelong view, which has only been validated in adulthood, is that kids are the most honest and true evaluators of people. Watching my children with Scooter, and all children with him, all of them, he is Santa Claus! You'd think he hung the moon. Nah, he hung Valerie Plame out to dry, that's who he hung. He is gentle and caring. He's genuinely interested in others' well-being and still inspires me to this day. He's a compelling teacher and extraordinary role model for integrity and humility. I've seen what this trial has done to my own kids, you son of a bitch, judge you. No, okay, I added that. I've seen what this trial has done to my own kids. What? She's blaming the judge. Where's the Republican personal responsibility? You know, personal responsibility, Republicans, hauling arts up from the bootstraps. Yeah. I cannot imagine the toll on Scooter and Harriet's young ones. Setting aside the pain of the Libby family, my girls just don't understand, Judge. They're old enough to intellectually comprehend the facts of the case, but associating these facts with Mr. Scooter remains a complete disconnect to them. My family is praying the wisdom and mercy you bring to bear in determining Scooter's future will include a consideration of his family, you monster! The price they have already paid and what further justice would be served by additional devastation to them and the many other children, Judge, who love Mr. Scooter. With respect and gratitude for your service, Mary Madeline and James Carville. And James Carville. Oh, that James Carville.
I'm so destroyed.
The one that I love, though, is they're old enough to intellectually comprehend the facts of the case, but ascertaining these facts with Mr. Scooter, but associating these facts with Mr. Scooter, remains a complete disconnect to them. And there it is. There it is. Mary Madeline cannot comprehend the banality of evil. This is America. This is a place where we have to disconnect the evil that we do for money or political power or social advancement from the decency that we just wish we could have. They can't understand. They've had it explained to them that Mr. Scooter was an active participant in trying to compromise the lives not just of one, but perhaps dozens of secret agents. And for no other reason than the naked exercise of a raw, politically motivated vendetta. And they can't square that, the little Madeline Carville girls. They can't square that with the man who played Guess Who's a Secret Agent with them on Halloween night and made them costumes down in the bunker. But I'll warrant that in many instances, children all across this country couldn't square the mommy and daddy that they love with the monstrous things that they do in the daytime. And I'm not just talking about politics. I'm talking about the guy who goes off to work in the morning and gets on the phone and harasses people for MasterCard and Visa who are having trouble paying their bill. Or the unmitigated SOB from the gas company a few years ago that went into a shack in Raleigh County, West Virginia, and turned the gas off on a house where a little boy 6 days old froze to death. Our children cannot square the goodness that we try to be around them with the evil that we perpetrate. And by we, I speak collectively. I have no misgivings, and I'll let my kids sit back here anytime they want to and listen to what mommy and daddy do, because we're not ashamed of this. But the same cannot always be said about the people. Oh, how about the quality assurance nurse who, full of optimism, got an RN degree, and then for better money and to get off the ward, took a job with the insurance company and now sits around telling cancer patients which treatments they can't have and essentially sentencing them to death. If Mary Madeline and James Carville were asked to write a letter for her, would they? Sure they would, and they'd say that their little girls really there's a disconnect between that good person they know and the awful things that they've read about. How many times, but of course, you know, they're not Scooter Libby, the people who spend their time in front of judges most of the time in America. They're poor working schlubs, and they don't have lawyers with 150 name letterheads writing federal judges for them. They just go in naked, terrified, and alone before that guy in the black robe, and they get handed justice with seldom even a soupçon of mercy. Because that is the punishment fetish that we enjoy here in Bushmerica. We'll be back after we take a quick break. We'll be joined by Sansara Taylor. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. You're listening to The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
The Head-On Radio Network. The Horn.
This is Billy Shears. Do you remember the Kellogg's Rice Krispies jingle?
Snap,
What a happy sound. Snap is the happiest sound I've found. You may clap, rap, tap, clap, but snap makes the world go round. Snap, crackle, pop, Rice Krispies.
Well, this week on Foxed Up, you will be surprised to know just who composed that jingle and the band who recorded it. So join us this Wednesday at 11 a.m. Eastern with John Fox on Foxed Up. Right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Pops the sound, the best is missed unless Pops around.
This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
As I understand the conflict right now between the president's bill and the one supported by the Democrats, John McCain and Lindsey Graham, is that John McCain and Lindsey Graham and the Democrats say that the bill, the standards we use, should be the standards that are the same as the treaty we signed, the Geneva Convention signed after World War II that every civilized nation follows. And the president is saying, that restricts me too much. That's too humane. I want to be able to do other things. I won't say what they are, but sources tell us that things like waterboarding, you know, drowning people, putting them in 50-degree weather. And the question, I think, is should we hold the United States to the same standards that England holds itself to, that Canada holds itself to, that other civilized nations hold themselves to?
Get the view from inside the Beltway with Mark Levine on the Radio Inside Scoop. Right here, 2 to 3 p.m. weekdays on the Head On Radio Network.
Welcome back. It is so good to be back here behind this microphone. I'm still shaking and rattling and shimmying a little bit from the rail cars. But I'm back. I'm happy about it. On the phone with us right now, a person with whom we've had previous conversations that I have really enjoyed. Sansara Taylor, are you there, Sansara?
Hi, Bob. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you? So glad to talk to you.
Thank you. I'm doing well. Thanks.
Good, good. Back when Cindy Sheehan made her announcement that she was stepping away from the fight, I received a note from you and a gorgeous little piece of writing to the effect that it's not about Cindy Sheehan. And it's taken us a little time to hook up and get together and get everything put together, but I'm so glad to have you on here to continue this discussion.
Well, thank you. Yeah.
Go ahead, please.
Oh, I was just going to say, when, and I know it's not as fresh right now, but when Cindy Sheehan resigned first from the Democratic Party and then from the anti-war movement, the thing that struck me the most, and of course everybody was, you know, and was affected by that because people were very inspired by Cindy Sheehan's stand,
yes,
by her courage, by her commitment, by her willingness to take her own devastating loss and her pain and put it in the service of waking other people up and confronting and challenging the illegitimacy of the president, the biggest liar and killer on the planet. And so, you know, obviously people were inspired by that, rightfully so, and there was a lot of people trying to figure out what should Cindy be doing? Is she right? Is she wrong? You know, and I really looked at this and I thought, this is a statement about the society that we live in, that a woman like Cindy Sheehan, first of all, the fact that she lost her son in the first place, that had to happen. But then that somebody like her, who is so courageous, who sacrificed a 29-year marriage, who sacrificed time with her remaining children, who had her reputation impugned, every single word she said.
Who financially devastated herself.
Yeah, yeah. And that this society does not cherish and have room for a woman like this, I think is an indictment of the country that we live in. And that there are 300 million people in this country, and we have choices to make. So let's reflect on what are we going to do. And yes, Cindy has taken a step back, but we have choices to make. This war is still going on. It is still wrong. It is still stealing the children of other people in this country and in Iraq. And we have a responsibility, even more so now, to step up and resist and to bring this war to a halt.
Well, when Cindy Sheehan did step into the breach, she did so when her voice was almost the only voice there was. She birthed, for all intents and purposes, the anti-war movement that was laying dormant. There were people out there, you, me, a lot of us, who knew the war was wrong, who were saying something about it, but nobody could put a face on it. And the right wing surge was so strong at that point, you know, with the Dixie Chick album burnings and the support the troops rallies, to do what she did. Really, was a mark of courage that I don't know how many of the rest of us have.
I think you're right, and I think there's a lesson too in her actions, which are that you're exactly right, and it's hard for people to remember now because today people feel like, oh, everybody's against the war, but we're so disillusioned, there's nothing we can do to stop it, blah blah blah. At that time, people, like you said, they were burning the Dixie Chicks album. The president was at the height of his popularity. But Cindy Sheehan, one woman who had right on her side and moral conviction and certitude, stepped out there and camped out in a ditch in Texas and galvanized and captured the imagination of millions and millions of people in this country and around the world because she was right. And she was fearless about it. And I do think that there's a lesson there, in terms of all of us, you know, and for her, it was not a casual, I'm going to a protest every few months, then I'm going to vote every now and then, and I'm going to hope that something happens.
It was a life.
Yeah, she really changed her life, and I think that this is what's being imposed on, you know, 4 million Iraqi refugees, hundreds of thousands of Iraqis who've lost family members. Their lives have been imposed upon, and I think that here in this country, we have to change our lives. We have to, you know, we have to sacrifice too, and we have to be, you know. Courageous.
Well, how do we
confidence that other, if we're right like she was, that other people will be moved by that. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask you, I agree with you, but how do we change? How do we sacrifice? What did, you know, on the other side, you know, that George Bush came out after 9/11 and told us the way to be good Americans was to go shopping more. I think that's one of the unfocused areas of our side of the debate and our side of the protest, Sansara, is that, you know, okay, we'll show up on a Saturday and we'll carry a poster, or we'll show up on a Friday evening and we'll light a candle, but then we go home and nothing's different.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any thoughts on what, how we manifest the reality for ourselves and our neighbors?
Well, I think there's two things that jump out at me. One is that if the May 25th vote to fund this war to the tune of $100 billion more dollars with no benchmarks, I mean, with no timetables for withdrawal, if that tells us anything, after the huge, you know, everybody thought the election in November was a repudiation of the war, the Democrats were going to do something to stop it. If this arc between the November elections and May 25th should teach us anything, it's that it is not, this war is not going to be stopped through official politics or through people channeling and pouring their energies into the official framework that's being, you know, the spectrum of debate and quote-unquote reasonable positions between the pro-war Bush camp and the pro-war Democratic leadership. I think that people really do need to take this as a moment when I think this is a moment that people could either become paralyzed, demoralized, and resign themselves, or can say, okay, we're fed up. Now we're going to, you know, like you're saying, go out in the streets, protest. And I think that the problem has not been that the protests have been ineffectual. I think the problem has been that there's not been nearly enough protest, not nearly enough resistance, not nearly enough hounding Bush and Cheney and all the officials everywhere that they go, the Republican candidates, the Democratic candidates who refuse to demand an immediate withdrawal from this war or a reversal of the Military Commissions Act that legalized torture. These people need to be hounded politically everywhere they go, need to be drowned out. And I think that really the problem has been that there's been far too little protest. And I know that the World Can't Wait movement is currently in the middle of raising money to publish a full-page ad in the New York Times, should be coming out in about a week, that runs through the crimes of this administration and calls on people, that has a quote, you know, millions feel that official politics is insufficient to meet the demands of these times, but they lack a vehicle to act. And this movement, the World Can't Wait movement, has reached out to different corners of society, people who view things very differently, and said we ourselves need to become a vehicle through national days of resistance, through, you know, they're doing impeachment forums later this month in several major cities in New York and Chicago and San Francisco. So that's one place I would definitely recommend people go to, worldcan'twait.org. And then there's a lot of work that needs to be done from the bottom up.
Yeah, boots on the ground kind of work.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's about, well, like I said, you know, a Friday night candlelight vigil or a Saturday protest. What about sustained protest? You know, where you sit down and you don't leave. Do you think we'll get to that point? Because one of the things that I have argued over the course of the days, weeks, months, years of this program, is that one of the biggest problems we face is that the powers that be know that, okay, there's going to be a million people protesting on Saturday. On Sunday, they're going to be gone.
Mm-hmm.
And so they don't have to pay attention to that voice because they know that everybody's got to go back to their job, because if they don't go back to their job, they lose their job, they lose the house, they lose the boat, they lose the 46-inch plasma screen TV that they haven't paid off on their Visa card and won't pay off until the year 2037. All of those things. How do we manifest the sustained effort, the sustained outrage, the sustained passionate, determined commitment to this republic?
Well, I think that what you're describing is the kind of thing that is needed. I think that it will come to that. It needs to come to that, and you know that everybody listening has an obligation. I mean, we all do. We have to forge these answers ourselves. To make plans to do something like that. Go and have a sit-in. I know that the school year is now over for the college campuses, but there began to be student strikes, one at University of Santa Barbara in Southern California, which was, you know, 1,000 students walked out of schools, struck for the day, and went and took over the local highway, sat down. And this was a really big deal, but that needs to be happening. And if you think about what kind of resistance, widespread, nationwide, took place during the Vietnam War, among the soldiers, among the students, among working people, among intellectuals and academics who disaffected and came out to the teach-ins, you had, and I know they're much maligned today, but yes, among people in Hollywood, people with prestige and reputations who put that on the line. I think we need a society that is convulsing in opposition and demanding an immediate end to this war, and that's very different than, like you're saying, you know, a routinized protest and back to normal, or even, and especially right now, funneling and pouring people's energies into an electoral process that is promising you that there is no electable leading candidate who is saying, who has promised an immediate withdrawal of the troops and is doing everything they can today to fight to make that happen.
Well, to the best of my knowledge, there is one candidate who's promising that, as far as Dennis Kucinich.
Well, that's what I'm saying in terms of viable, electable
presidential
candidates, that this is a process that is rigged. You can see it right now. It was like the 2004 election. You had Kucinich then, too, but by the time you got to the actual election, you had two pro-war candidates, John Kerry, saluting and reporting for duty.
Yeah, the guy in the blue trunks versus the guy in the red trunks. We were just discussing Sansara in our chat room there at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. The fact that so much of this is, you know, I'm a little bit of a redneck, and we speak plainly. It's wrestling, okay? Mm-hmm. It's the bout at the Donut Junction. The National Guard Armory will be won by the guy in the blue trunks on Friday. They'll go 25 miles away to Centerville, and the guy in the red trunks will win on Saturday night.
Mm-hmm.
That's the setup behind all of this. Whether it's the so-called special appropriations bill, where we watched what we thought was the Democratic majority in the House pass along, and the Senate signed off on it too. George Bush vetoed it, and so then they just capitulated. They just dried up out of fear of something. I can't even comprehend what they're afraid of. The guy in the White House doesn't have the approval rating of a dog catcher.
Yeah.
And they operate from fear.
I think they operate from the interest of empire. I think fundamentally, at its core, the Democratic Party is a ruling class party, and I think that's what's being demonstrated. Because they would have the backing of the people, they would have the backing of the Constitution, of the rule of law, they would have absolutely, and they had the power. I think this is also very important that people understand. They said, oh, we didn't have enough votes to override Bush's veto. Well, they didn't need to override his veto. If they just kept putting forward their same bill,
precisely,
and Bush kept vetoing it, then there would be no funding and the war would end. They had the power to do that, but they chose not to, and I think this is reflecting that they...
Well, was that the politics of fear, though, Sansara, insofar as they were afraid that they would be blamed for starving the troops and stranding them in Iraq?
I don't think so. I think that there is enough money in the pipelines that they could bring the troops home. There is no question that they would find the resources to bring the troops home. That's just no question. What I think that they're operating on is that they have... The U.S. is the sole superpower in the world, the number one hegemon in the world, and trying to hold on to that position, needs strategic control over the resources in the Middle East, starting in Iraq, but not ending there. And this is why they're also, both parties, the Democrats and the Republicans, are both vying for how are they going to go after Iran next. They're not trying to figure out how to get out of the region. They're figuring out how to remake the region. And I think that this is, you know, these are interests that are not shared by the majority of the people in this country. I don't think it's in our interest to go in and terrorize and remake the Middle East. I think it's in the interest of empire.
It was not lost on me that the next chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, at a time when we are involved in a ground war in Iraq, is going to be an admiral, a Navy guy.
Mm-hmm.
That tells me where... That does. I agree with you. That tells me where they're looking, because... the air war that is being contemplated against Iran will be run off the decks of aircraft carriers and out of the tubes of submarines and from the launchers of guided missile destroyers.
Mm-hmm.
So that, I mean, you're absolutely right. They're not planning to get out. So this leads me to what I think is an inevitable question. What do you do in 2008? Are you going to retire from the field, so to speak, and just say I'm not going to dirty my hands on either Democrats or Republicans? Because see, this was one of the things that got Cindy Sheehan got her in, I guess, trouble, if you want to use that word, when she finally said she was as sick of the Democrats as she was of the Republicans. She was excoriated by the people who had been backing her in the so-called Democrats.
Yeah. Well, I think what Cindy did, and she wrote this in her letter, and I think this is really important, and that everybody should measure themselves against this. She says, why would you call it a war crime, torture, a war of aggression, the acts committed through this war in Iraq by George Bush? Why would they be considered war crimes when committed by Bush, but the same acts, when funded and approved of by the Democrats, are not called that? Why would we have a double standard? Is it either an illegal, illegitimate, immoral war that is, by Nuremberg standards, a war of aggression? We were not attacked. There was no legitimate claim to self-defense. This is, by the standards used to try the Nazis, a war of aggression, the highest order of war crime. Is that true or not true? And if it's true, then doesn't it apply to everybody who's funding it and approving it? And I think that's an important standard, and that, you know, that we in the anti-war movement and everybody who does not want this war to continue ought to use an objective standard, not a partisan, you know, lens when describing what's happening in Iraq. So that's on the one hand, but then what to do about 08 is, I feel very strongly that we should not be calculating based on 08. We should be calculating today and tomorrow. This war is wrong. It is escalating. It is worsening. And we have the power to stop it. And I really feel strongly that if we do not impeach or drive from office George Bush before 08, then it doesn't matter who becomes, it matters who becomes the next president. But in a fundamental sense, no matter who becomes the next president, they will be presiding over a regime, over a country that has been fundamentally altered, that has got a doctrine of preemptive war, that has legalized torture, that has ripped up habeas corpus, that is moving each day closer to a theocracy. We could talk about the recent Supreme Court decision that restricts women's access to abortion and institutionalizes whole new standards for how women's bodies and decisions should be judged. All of these things have been codified and normalized, and if we do not repudiate and drive out and impeach Bush long before 08, or even on the last day before 08, you know, but if we don't get a motion going in this country, a movement going in this country that is demanding that now, but instead look towards 08, then no matter who becomes the next president, they're going to be residing over all these new norms, which are horrific.
And we're still going to be talking about this crap in 2009.
Yeah, and more than that, in 20, 30 years, or even 10 years, people are going to look back on us and say that we were no better than the Germans, the good Germans. Because everything that, if you think about it, anybody listening, if you were to make a list, you yourself, go back in your mind 5 years, 6 years, and make a list of things that you thought you would never learn to live with, things that you never thought would happen in your lifetime, would have been over hundreds of years ago or tens of years ago, and you'd never have to live through, and if you had to live through them, you would never accept them. And you made that list and you pulled it out today. How many of those things have you learned to accept, whether they be torture, whether they be hundreds of thousands of Iraqi lives based on a bald-faced lie, and the liar is still in the highest office in the world? You go down the list. How many of these things do you think you would learn to live with? And each day people are learning to accept new horrors and outrages. And I think that this is, again, underscores the need for people to build resistance today, to you know, step into the breach left by Cindy Sheehan, to go to worldcan'twait.org and hook up with this movement. Because I say that the last point to make on that is there's not only the negative, which I'm emphasizing, what we're learning to accept, what crimes are being committed in our name, but there's a positive on this, which is that it still is the case that the majority of this country opposes, and actually this majority is growing, opposes this president, opposes this war, does not want the future that's being imposed on us. So there's a basis, if we dare to act on that, I think,
and
a very strong basis to drive this regime out, to demand impeachment, and to effect that.
Well, I hope people will go to worldcan'twait.org, and I hope people will get in the streets, and I hope they'll talk to their neighbors, and I hope that they carry on conversations in the lines at the grocery store or across the gasoline pump at the local Rippy Mart or whatever, because all of this, every single thing that we would like to have I know that you have a great deal of idealism. And I know that none of the idealism that we all hold can ever be brought to life, can ever be brought to bear, can ever be brought to fruition in this country until this war ends.
Mm-hmm.
We can't have universal health care. We can't have a sane discussion about habeas corpus or a sane discussion about women's reproductive rights until this war ends. Because it is the all-consuming monster of our time. And history, and you're absolutely right, history will judge us. So, you know, I applaud you for the work that you're doing. I applaud you for your willingness to stand up and be strongly be heard calling for impeachment. I know you've had to deal with the likes of Bill O'Reilly. And God knows I'd still be in the shower if I were you trying to wash that off. But stay with it. Don't lose heart. Because this can be a soul-consuming process, and I know that.
Well, thank you, Bob.
And I hope, you're welcome here anytime, by the way.
Well, thank you.
And
I enjoy talking with you.
We will talk again soon, I hope, Sansara.
Okay.
All right. Be well.
You too.
Bye now.
Bye.
I like to think of Sansara as a friend of the program. I think the first person who ever talked with her on the horn was our good friend Bruce Birch. And what a heart Sansara has. And she's right in what she says. If we want change, we have to make the change, demand the change, be the change. It's time for the news. When we come back, another conversation. KTLK Los Angeles talk host Bree Walker will be with us to talk, in fact, about Camp Casey. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. You're listening to The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. On Capitol Hill, the Senate is considering a formal debate on a no-confidence vote on Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez. President Bush dismissed the vote as a waste of time. The top Republican on the Senate Judiciary Committee, however, stands with the Democrats. Arlen Specter says he will vote a resounding no-confidence in Gonzalez. A federal appeals court has ruled against the Bush administration over the detention of a U.S. resident accused of being an Al-Qaeda agent. The court ordered the man released. He had not been charged and was being held in solitary confinement at a military facility since 2003. The president returns to Washington this evening. Tomorrow, he'll go to Capitol Hill to try and revive the stalled immigration bill. He vowed that the legislation will pass, saying, "I'll see you at the bill signing." The UK's future Prime Minister, Gordon Brown, arrived in Baghdad this morning to meet with Iraqi officials. Britain, America's staunchest ally in Iraq, has already begun withdrawing its troops. A suicide bomber who collapsed a main highway bridge north of Baghdad killed 3 U.S. soldiers. 3 more American troops were killed in other incidents over the weekend. Other violence killed at least 50 Iraqis. Kuwait says it would not permit the U.S. military to use its bases for an attack on Iran. The statement came after Connecticut Senator Democrat Joseph Lieberman suggested the U.S. military should use airstrikes on militant training camps in Iran. In Gaza, rival Palestinian forces continue fighting. This morning, gunmen targeted the Prime Minister's house. When the Parliament building was attacked, lawmakers fled and legislative meetings were canceled. Mortar shells killed 2 Red Cross workers in Lebanon near a Palestinian refugee camp. It's thought that Fatah Islamic militants fired the shells. And 2 NASA astronauts at last got to continue their spacewalk to do some work on the exterior of the International Space Station. An overload of the station's stabilizing gyroscopes held up the mission for about 40 minutes. And U2 rock star Bono will invest $30 million to pressure the 2008 political candidates to focus on his global anti-poverty campaign. The effort urges fighting disease and poverty and improving water and education globally. You're listening to the Quality News Network. We have science and business news coming up next.
Monterey is the home of a new national radio voice. It's America Back on Track from the Quality News Network. Tune in weekdays at noon Pacific to this new national broadcast, a conversation with America designed to get our country back on track. America Back on Track features local and long-distance guests sharing global ideas on where we are, how we got here, where we want to go, and how we might get there. So take an hour out of your day to plug into the future, our future. Discover the solutions to the problems that have gridlocked our nation for all too long. Eschew the agenda-driven palaver of the left and the right. Tune into America Back on Track for honest talk about the important issues and how they can be resolved.
America Back on Track, weekdays at noon on KRML, 1410 a.m. in the Monterey area, and streaming live online at QNNAmerica.com. America Back on Track, our ticket to a healthy and productive future.
Both India and China will launch unmanned moonshots within a year, according to the LA Times. India says its probe will focus on three-dimensional mapping, while China says its scientists are interested in the geochemistry of the moon's surface. China's first astronaut says his country will offer an international proposal governing activities in outer space. No details have been revealed yet. Federal authorities expanded an E. coli recall of fresh and frozen beef sold by California's United Food Group in nearly a dozen western states. The recall now covers more than 6 million pounds of meat. A drug commonly used to treat high blood pressure could be effective against the progression of Parkinson's disease. Tests on mice at Northwestern University showed a rejuvenation of dying brain neurons. And scientists say the number of people with Alzheimer's and other brain diseases will quadruple in the next 40 years. By 2050, one out of 85 people worldwide will suffer with the condition. And a Chinese reporter sentenced to prison for a decade has joined a lawsuit against Yahoo, claiming the search engine turned information over to authorities, leading to his arrest. The Lundberg survey says in the past 3 weeks, prices at the pump fell for the first time since January. Light sweet crude is trading at $65.97 a barrel, and Wall Street closed even. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Laurel Krissen.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Six minutes past the hour. I think I said that last hour. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On for a Monday night. And like I said, I so thoroughly admire the passion and the commitment that Sansara Taylor brings to what matters to her. I hope there's a lot more like her. I get the sense that there is an undercurrent of disgust among younger Americans with the tawdry, foul, messed up bunch of garbage that we are going to hand off to them. I remember that poem by was it Wordsworth that says the world is too much with us. We lay waste our days getting and spending, coming and going, something like that. And maybe that's why we have a hard time comprehending that what we do now will be judged in the future. Now, I was just having a conversation off air with our friend Malin, who said that he fears that one of the reasons that people won't make a stronger stand is that they have been put in a position of fear in the last 6 years. Such that they're afraid that they'll just get disappeared because this government has a predilection for disappearing people. A human rights group came out in the last few days with a whole list of people who have just disappeared. And they weren't disappeared by the communist Chinese. They were disappeared by the government you pay your taxes for every year. I mean, is that just horrifying to you to contemplate? Now, a court ruling came out today, surprisingly, of all places, from the 4th United States Circuit Court of Appeals. I say surprisingly because the 4th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals is one of the most conservative, so to speak, circuits in the United States. I mean, this is a circuit court that once upon a time ruled that a man who didn't want to give a blood sample could be strapped to a chair and have the needle jammed in him and have the blood drawn out of him against his will, never mind the Fourth Amendment proscription against illegal searches and seizures. So out of the Fourth Circuit today, a ruling that orders the military to either charge Ali Saleh Khala Al-Mari with his alleged terrorist crimes in a civilian court or let him go. And of course, I'm sure the White House spin machine is already working overdrive on this matter, because this is again from one of the most conservative circuits in the country, that handles Maryland, North Carolina, Virginia, and West Virginia, a ruling that says, and perhaps South Carolina, I'm not sure. Yeah, maybe South Carolina. Because that's where this man has been imprisoned without a charge against him for the last 5 years. Just stop for a minute and let that idea happen inside your head. I don't care what he is accused of, what he is thought to have done, how dangerous, how desperate he might be. Stop for a minute and say to yourself, I am an American. We have certain things that we hold dear to us. We have certain legal principles. We are a nation of laws and not of persons. And think that a man, Ali Saleh Khala Al-Mari, has been held in a military brig for 5 years without so much as being charged with a crime. This is literally this is stuff out of Camus and Kafka. This is the fascist nightmare that you can't wake up from. George says he has exceptionally broad powers to detain anyone he wants. By the way, by anyone he wants, that means citizens or non-citizens that he can get his hands on. The appeals panel, this from the Washington Post story today, the appeals panel said President Bush overstretched his authority by declaring Al-Mari an enemy combatant because the Constitution protects... Oh, look at this. I think I've said this before. The Constitution protects both U.S. citizens and legal residents such as Al-Mari from an unchecked military and from being detained without charges and a fair trial. See, Al-Mari wasn't even thought to have been a 9/11 conspirator. He was detained as a material witness. Mama, just a witness. Not even charged with anything. Not even thought to be part of anything. Just a witness. And he has been held incommunicado for over 5 years. What the court said? The president cannot eliminate constitutional protections with the stroke of a pen by proclaiming a civilian, even a criminal civilian, an enemy combatant subject to indefinite military detention. Put simply, the Constitution does not allow the president to order the military to seize civilians residing within the United States and detain them indefinitely without criminal process, and this is so even if he calls them enemy combatants. Hell, he can call them evildoers. The court says he can't do it. Now, back up. The government is expected to appeal this decision to the Supreme Court. Who's there? Knock, knock. Who's there? Bunch of weirdo Republican the activist judges on the Supreme Court. Yeah, right. Do you think that old donut stains on the letters Alito will vote to uphold the Second Circuit's reasoning? Do you think Thomas will do it? Do you think Scalia will do it? Do you think Roberts will do it? Do you think Kennedy will do it?
Kennedy's got cover now. He can go and sleaze around with the right-wing thugs like he's always wanted to do. He used to have to pretend to have a conscience once in a while, because otherwise he'd be caught out for the thug that he was. Is. Not anymore. So enjoy this while it lasts. It ain't gonna. I'll be here. It'll be a month. It'll be 3 months. It'll be 6 months. But I'll be sitting here, and we'll be counting up the judges, and we'll once again be talking about the confirmation of Samuel Alito, and we will wonder, oh Jesus, we will wonder, how long, oh Lord, how long we will have to put up with the monstrosity that George W. Bush created in the Supreme Court. Almari is the last of three U.S. residents who had been imprisoned at the Charleston, South Carolina brig. The others, Yasser Esam Hamdi, captured on the battlefield in Afghanistan, he did 3 years without being so much as charged with a crime. He was released and sent to his native Saudi Arabia. That was after the Supreme Court said in 2004 that U.S. citizens have to be provided with a trial by an impartial court. And then there's Jose Padilla. You remember Jose? Almost as much of a yutz as Richard Reed the Unabomber. No, not the Unabomber, the Shoe Bomber. Sorry. I get my bombers confused. Padilla was the one that John Ashcroft appeared on television to announce the capture of. All breathlessly. Oh, he was going to get a dirty bomb and he was going to set it off and none of it, not a blessed word of it, turned out to be true. And so, he's been let go. Not let go, he's been let out of the brig. He was transferred from the brig in November 2005 to a civilian prison in Miami in 2006. He's still in prison. He's still awaiting justice. Enjoy this decision while it lasts, because it will not withstand the vote of that man that Robert Byrd said he believed would be a strong defender of religion. It will not withstand the vote of Sammy Alito and the thugs he runs with. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. You're listening to The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Brought to you by the Republican National Committee. George W. Bush, Maximum Decider.
There's a lot of talk out there as how this E. coli in hamburgers is dangerous to your health. Well, it's not as dangerous as the terrorists. They hate you. A toxic case of the runs ain't nothing compared to the smoke and rubble of your local Walmart. If you quit eating hamburger, the terrorists win. Hamburger doesn't hate your freedoms, but the terrorists do. Fear. It's what's for dinner.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 3/4. All you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
The following is a Head On Radio Network special announcement. Ha ha, I'm back! That's right, the rampaging, ranting, tree-hugging, planet-saving, head-banging hippie is back at a brand new time. Fox Up returns weekdays 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific, and late night 1 a.m. in Sydney. So set your streamer to a new Foxed Up time here on The Horn, the Head On Radio Network.
Advertising on the Cup of Joe radio show is both easy and inexpensive. Ads that cost as little as $5 a piece are a bargain when you consider that the Cup of Joe show has an audience in the thousands for a live show, and that's not even counting the thousands more that listen on iTunes or at the archives on the White Rose Society. And all you have to do is email me at joe@cupjoe.com, that's C-U-P-J-O-E.com, to find out how you can advertise your blog, organization, or product. What are you waiting for? Email me now at joe@cupjoe.com, C-U-P-J-O-E.com, and let Internet Radio Ads work for you.
See, this is what happens when I pre-announce things. It's why I don't like to. We book guests, and sometimes we get stood up. And it seems to be, it coincides with me pre-announcing the guest. If I just go about my business and then we have the guest, then we don't get stood up. But if I pre-announce it, something's going to go wrong.
Well, no, Mr. Palace,
yeah, sends Greg,
his apologies, but he will be on with us at 8 p.m.
Eastern time.
That's right. And Ms. Walker may just have gotten lost. We'll find her.
Yeah, okay. Okay, but in the meantime, this is Conversation Radio. Let's have some conversations. We're joined by Luke in Knoxville. Hey, Luke, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
How are you?
Well, I'm fine. I was listening to you when you were doing the letters a minute ago.
Yeah.
And I was sitting there waiting for the next line. And I tell you, he was a wonderful person until I found out he hacked up 153 people in his basement, you know?
Yeah.
You know?
You should see these things. I'll have to find the website or... But
you know what I mean? That's what it sounds like. The way they're reading it just sounds like it's the same thing. You know, he was such a nice young man, kept to himself.
Quiet, didn't make much trouble.
We ignored those screams at night. That had nothing special to do with it.
But, you know, you don't have to be out there frothing at the mouth to do the kind of evil that Scooter Libby did.
God. Well, like I say, we still have never, ever seen, I read Larry Johnson a lot, and like I say, we still have never seen anything, and like he said, they've probably already done it. But you know, there's never been one mention of the damage assessment to Brewster Jennings.
No.
You know, I mean, how many people across the world got exposed by that? You know.
Well, that's what I said. You know, tens, dozens, hundreds. And, you know, they're not out, they're not all running around in trench coats and dark glasses.
Just people they talk to, you know what I mean? And somebody said, well, you were talking to Brewster Jennings. That means you're a spy.
And the next thing you know, they're using your name in conjunction with phrases like sectarian violence.
I know. Well, let's get on to some other things.
Yeah, go ahead.
I didn't get to talk to you last week. I'm sorry about this. Did you see the thing where Washington Post Radio is actually thinking of putting somebody on their radio?
Huh?
Did you see the...
No, what?
They were thinking about putting Glenn Beck on their radio show, or channel.
Oh, for heaven's sakes.
I mean, I was sitting there going, this is the same Glenn Beck. If you go over to Media Matters, you can play the part where he said, I think it was last week, that the only way Dennis Kucinich got his wife was by use of a date rape drug.
Yeah. We ran that audio here. It was disgusting. And went on to then do a radio illustration, if you will, of necrophilia. Yeah, this is...
I've given up to the point now. I'll be honest. I'm not going to watch CNN anymore. I used to tape the Wolf Blitzes show just so I could watch Cafferty File. But I'm at the point now I ain't even going to do that anymore. You know, CNN has wasted whatever feelings of...
goodwill?
Yeah. Well, yeah, but you know what I mean? Just respect.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They've just...
Well, you know, for the most part, for God's sakes, Luke, I worked for CNN.
Oh. Okay, I for them, and a lot of people we know work for them, but like I say, it ain't the same place it once was.
No, it's not, and so I had a little bit of goodwill. It's gone for me too, long gone. I mean, this isn't just happened, but I got to thinking the other day about when do I use, how do I use it? The only time any CNN stuff ever makes it on the air here is to point out what a bunch of horses' rear ends they are.
Well, have you seen the thing? I will admit I watched the debates the other night because that was kind of a national something, you know what I mean? They
yeah.
have to. But did you notice on that thing Huckabee was the first one over there, went right after Thompson? I'm sitting there going, damn, I was thinking Mitt was going to go first.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just waiting for that. Oh, they had a thing on their crawl tonight on MSNBC announcing that Mr. Thompson's going to be on the Tonight Show tomorrow night, so. Don't know if he's going to announce anything or what, but you know how that goes.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
I know.
I wish he'd just announce it and get it over with.
No. See, now once he announces, he has to start answering questions.
And like filing campaign finance reform.
He has to start answering questions. He can't just say, I'm just thinking about it.
I know. This is like a little bit of, like over the clothesline gossip, but did you catch Joe Scarborough intimating that Fred's wife is a stripper?
No, I'm sorry. I can't watch Joe. It's just one of those things. It's like no.
I wouldn't. For the life of me, I wouldn't have believed it unless I'd seen it with my own two bloodshot eyes. But yeah, he was right there behind an Electra Voice RE20 microphone, just like I am now. And he said, Fred Thompson's wife, does she work the pole? I kid you not.
This could be fun.
And I thought I was kind of verging over into some territory I wasn't comfortable with by pointing out the fact that she's 4 years younger than Fred's daughter. And
well, I mean, that's just a fact. You know what I mean? That ain't saying nothing about her. That's just saying, here's the fact. She's 4 years younger than Fred's daughter. I mean, that's not saying anything bad. That's just saying, here, gang, pay attention to these numbers just in case.
But that tells you what's going on here. Joe Scarborough, for God's sakes, was a member of Congress. You know, he's stayed, and he's got, button-down collar shirts with the monograms on the cuffs and all of that Washington stuff. And now he's trying to go Glenn Beck.
Of course. I mean, we were talking about CNN. Well, I'm at the point with MSNBC. I'll watch Oberman, but that's about it. I mean, God, is it try to watch Matthews, and he has such a... It's like I said, if he was not on the news on TV, we could probably get him arrested as a stalker. Because it's like I say, he's really interested in Bill and Hillary's sex life. You know what I mean?
And oddly enough, the mention of that just makes me cringe.
It does.
I guess it's why I could never be successful as a big terrestrial radio star, because I don't want to talk about stuff that turns my own stomach, let alone turns somebody else's.
I know, that's the thing. It gets to you. It's like, guys, How would you like if we report this about you all? You know, let's start reporting about your all's family sex life.
But what you describe, Luke, is, I think, something that is happening in a lot of American psyches. We realize that we're participating in a crap fest.
Yeah.
There's nothing to be, and like I said, you know, years from now, when the historians look back and say, you know, when did American television journalism jump the shark? They're going to go to Friday, when the networks all broke away from Peter Pace to cover Paris Hilton, and that's the end of it.
You know, it's one of those things. It's like, say, every time you think that, you know, they found a low, it's like, no, they haven't got there yet.
Well, now they have.
They're holding on to anchors, and they're still going down in the.
No. They're there now. Whatever they do from here on out, I refuse to counter it or to consider that to be the new low. It's over. They're done. You know, turn off the transmitters, surrender the licenses, or at least quit calling yourselves journalists.
Did you see the story over at Kirkson Liars? About the head of AT&T retiring or stepping down, and he was giving a speech. This guy's name was Ed Whitecare, I think is what it was. And was talking to the board, I guess it was, and the people at AT&T, and was talking about how one of their big enemies is net neutrality.
Oh, yeah. They haven't given up.
Well, what they're talking about now is, instead of trying to regulate it, is trying to take all the regulations off so they can do anything they want.
Well, deregulation, that's I'm surprised they didn't go that way in the first time through, Luke, because that's their usual favorite. Regulation is keeping us, you know, just another case of the government keeping a white man down.
You know, but it's one of those things. It's like, because I think the people, enough people in the net screamed, you know, when they tried to think about regulate it. So now I think they're going to try the reverse. Take every regulation off. We don't care. You know, nothing should be, you know, should be. So that way they can do anything they want to, and they'll say, well, there's no regulation against it. You know, we can block up the bandwidth, and you all can't do such and such because there's no regulation against it.
Right.
Oh, gosh, I tell you what. Oh, you were talking about last week about the Democrats, what they should have done, you know, when George, instead of going back about the spending bill.
Mm-hmm.
Just like I say, they should have went on and said, okay, we're going to do education this week. George, when you want to compromise, you call us.
Yeah.
You know, we've sent you two good bills. You vetoed them? Good. We'll get back to you in a bit. You tell us when.
Yeah, we're busy now. We got a lot of work to do here.
Sure. Like I say, we tried to get two good bills out, and you said, no. Okay, we're going to go do something else.
But, you know, there was a little bit of truth that came out of Iraq, oddly enough, in the last day or so, Luke. A contractor over there whose job is transporting these concrete barriers, I think it is.
Oh, caissons?
Yeah. And said, you know, before, you know, we had a $4 million contract. Now we're making $300 million, and the fact of the matter is the war is nasty, but it's mighty good for business.
Well, you know, they were talking about Iraq, you know, getting out, you know, they're now all filling this thing. The fine gentleman from Connecticut was talking about.
I got him. I got the audio.
Well, but the thing is, you know, they're talking about all this stuff now with Iran and all this stuff. And it's like, say, fine. You don't want to complain about Iran, that's good. As soon as we hear you all talk, you know, how you all are putting the knuckles to Riyadh, you know, why are the Saudis allowed to send all the money and weapons they want to into Iraq? But, oh, by the way, Iran's sending money and weapons. Oh, dear God.
Yeah. But again, it's hard to have that debate in this country, Luke, because the American people, you know, I'm not quite to the tinfoil helmet part and the black helicopters outside where I'll say that they orchestrate this somehow. But people are more interested in Paris Hilton.
Well, like I say, we're in the sheeple mode, you know. Here, we'll show you something that'll entertain you. Watch a little bit more American Idol. Go on.
Well, I think people involve themselves in stories like Paris Hilton's because it will at some point have an end and some level of denouement and resolution.
Yeah.
There's a sensation in this country now, Luke, that there is no resolution. There is no denouement to Iraq, to everything going on in the Middle East, and it imposes a certain level of hopelessness.
Well, you know, it's like yesterday. I had to watch, you know, on the repeat thing, you know, on MSNBC, the Meet the Press. And they sat there and had Colin Powell on. I said, I don't think Colin Powell should be allowed on the TV until he apologizes.
No.
I went before the United Nations and I lied my head off because George asked me to.
And yet, far be it from Tim Russert to bring that little bit of that unpleasant
little bit up. Well,
you've
seen the last couple of weeks, it's been Meet the Republican Press again.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Then they had Girth and Van Atta on, and I'm just sitting there, I'm just screaming at the TV. Where's Joe Connison? Put Joe Connison on. I'd like to hear him talk about this.
Yeah.
Because Joe Connison cut Jeff Girth into 20 little pieces when he did Hunting for the President, him and Gene Lyons.
Mm-hmm.
They showed that calling Jeff Girth a hack is the evil thing to do due to a hack.
Yeah, it's a rotten thing to say about hack writers.
I mean, oh God.
Well, this is the first salvo in the swift boating of Hillary Clinton.
Oh yeah. Well, they were talking. Where was I saw it today?
And now, well, did you notice the sort of journalistic style question? I think it was posed to the Chicago Tribune why they've taken to merely referring to the junior senator from New York as Hillary.
Yeah.
You know, Cher, Madonna, Britney, Hillary.
Well, you saw the thing. It's over at Media Matters, where apparently Mr. Bossy's coming out with a book, and it's basically enough. And it was like Newsweek, I think, was doing some blurb on it. Amazingly enough, they didn't mention anything about somebody named about something called the Arkansas Project or some guy named Scaife, you know. but they didn't want to say he was a good investigator for the Senate when he's working for Let's Go Out Back and Shoot a Watermelon, Dan Burton.
Yeah, he did work for him, didn't he?
Oh, he was.
Is he the guy who shot the watermelon?
Yeah, he's the one. He's the one that I can prove Vince Foster was murdered. I reenacted it 20 times in my backyard.
With several different calibers of handgun. Oh, God. Hey, Luke, good to hear from you, brother.
Bye.
You take it easy. Bye now. And Susan. Hey, Susan, out in Oregon. How are you?
Good evening, Mr. Kincaid.
How are you? What's going on? Mister? When did I get Mister?
I'm rather angry.
Okay.
Not necessarily at you.
Well, good.
However,
I mean, I
do think that the Paris Hilton thing should be brought up for one reason only. To point up something.
The value of getting through high school?
No. A spoiled brat who is pushing 30 and is still wailing for her mummy, goes out, gets drunk, and can't manage to spend a couple nights in jail because it's uncomfortable.
Oh, I know. There's that whole Beretta, if you can't do the time, don't do the crime thing. I understand that,
Susan. It's an incredible amount of press. Tell me, what has happened to the press about Aaron Watata's case?
Were they ever even on it?
Not really. That man is risking a long, decades-long trip behind bars at what is called the United States Disciplinary Barracks. It's also called Leavenworth.
Yeah, sure.
That's a military prison. It's nothing but hard time, and he's doing it for one reason and one reason only, a principle. Because he believes Iraq is wrong.
You know,
disappears.
Sure. Susan, I think this is supposed to be a classless society. This is supposed to be a society where everybody's got their shot at the American dream. But if you've ever seen the Queen of England come here, for instance, you know that we fawn all over ourselves to get near to royalty. Now, me, I despise the very concept of royalty. the blue blood or predestination or preordination or manifest, whatever it is that divine right of kings. I loathe it. I just despise it. And yet this country aches for a monarch. It's probably 90% why we put up with all this garbage from George Bush. And it's also
the garbage that's behind Paris Hilton, because if we don't have the official kind, we make one.
Darn right. And we want to think that somebody out there can get away with it.
And, you know, my God, at the very least, you would think we could come up with somebody who's worth it. My God, she's a total loss.
Well, hey, there's Lindsay Lohan. I mean, you know, come on.
Oh, God, she's just as bad. But I'm beginning, you know, when I wrote an editorial about this, the last line in it was, I'm beginning to wonder if this country is even worth saving.
There are those days, aren't there?
There is a good, good man who is risking his entire future.
And frankly, as was mentioned earlier,
nobody gives a rip.
Cindy Sheehan sacrificed a 29-year marriage. 29-year marriages usually last, Susan.
Yeah.
And, you know, but what about Tinkerbell? I know. Susan, thanks so much. So good to hear from you.
You have a nice night.
You take care.
Give Agnes a kiss for me.
I sure will.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye now. On the phone with us now, calling from Southern California, Ms. Bree Walker. Bree is a host on KTLK Sunday afternoons from 2 to 4 Pacific. I've got the time right, don't I, Bree?
Saturday.
See?
Pretty close.
Well, that's as good as I can get, as close, I guess, sometimes. I'm kind of addled. I'm so glad to get a chance to talk with you and share your story with the folks who share their time with the Horn. You recently purchased from Cindy Sheehan the Camp Casey property. First of all, let me thank you for doing that on behalf of a lot of people. It was a noble gesture. Tell us, if you please, why.
Well, thank you, first off, for saying that. It really is a privilege just to have an opportunity to do that and to keep it out of the hands that looked like they were ready to grab it and to change the message, morph it into something that she never intended it to be. There was a group called Move America Forward, which masquerades as an anti-war peace movement, but in fact is a pro-invasion organization. And they wanted to get hold of it to erect a monument to the fallen soldiers, which in and of itself might be a good thing, but, of course, with the backing of a group that wanted to take it out of the anti-war movement and put it into the pro-invasion movement, it would have completely ruined the message that Cindy all along had wanted to keep going. Well, my goal is to just keep that furthered. You know, Bob, I don't know what the heck I'm doing here. I may have gotten myself in way over my head. In fact, I'm sure I have. But
it's the only way we learn to swim, though, isn't it?
I hope so. I'm going to have a lot of help to keep from drowning. I'm going to need a lot of help because it's going to take a lot of volunteers. And my goal was really just to buy the property and then send the karma out there to get back what I hope will be tons of volunteer efforts by people who feel like they haven't had a chance to do something, but they feel like they need to do something. So I bought the land, cashed in all my corporate stocks. I'm not a rich woman, but you know, I felt like I didn't really need to be in corporate stocks anyway at this point in my life. Having a passion for peace is a better way for my money to sit. And this will now, I hope, allow Cindy to relax and go into the next phase of her life with her family. And she spent some time on my show Saturday. In fact, we were there together for the whole 2 hours with various guests that she interacted with as well. And that's when we exchanged the check, and I told her that I was going to need her help, and I was going to ask for mentoring help from Code Pink and Iraq Veterans Against the War and Veterans for Peace and Progressive Democrats of America, that I was going to need to learn how to do this, because it was going to be, for me, my transition from talking dog, the thing I've done my whole life as a news anchor and a reporter and a radio person, into an activist on the ground in the trenches, shoulder to shoulder with the folks who get attacked all the time for what they're doing. And, you know, so I'm just trying to put my flak jacket on and not make too many mistakes in the interim. And this is really just day one in terms of a working day for learning how to do that and aligning the right people. But, you know, Cindy has had several years along with her sister Dee Dee now to get all of this in motion. And I trust that all of those who still want to be at Camp Casey will continue to work with me to keep it going as not only an anti-war location, but also a place where we can begin to grow things that are ecologically along the same lines of our thought as we progressives have in keeping native grasses growing, in building a peace garden, in having a place where tolerance for all religions, faiths, and beliefs can get along together, but not lose the truth behind all of this, which is that we're attempting to take war out of America's stance in the universe. So I, you know, now I'm just waiting to see who volunteers to step up and give their time and expertise in areas that I'm no good at, which is I'm not an organizational beast. As a talking dog, I don't have that skill. So I'm looking forward to getting as many volunteers as I can. I've got to gain some knowledge as to how to do some fundraising so that I can keep the maintenance on the property up.
Right, because once you get the deed, the trouble starts.
Exactly right, yep. And we will pass the deed over this coming weekend, and then I will go out there July 6th, 7th, and 8th with Cindy for her 50th birthday celebration on the property, and we'll attempt at that point to hand the mantle over to me. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm scared to death.
So I assume you're
going... When I heard that she was going to sell it, I couldn't sleep until I did something because I was scared that it would fall into the wrong hands.
You know, when you get struck by one of those things, Bree, you either act on it or you continue to be disturbed by it. I think you'll have peace out of this. I think you've done the right thing. And in seeking other people's input, obviously you're maybe looking for design influence. That's not a little corner lot. That's 5 acres.
That's right.
Of I guess what, gently rolling Texas.
I'm not even sure that it's hills at all. It might be entirely flat because I know nothing about that part of Texas. I've only been to Austin, Texas. For all I know, they don't allow people like me to go to any place but Austin, Texas. You know, but I'm looking forward to seeing it when I go out there. It'll be probably 105 degrees during the day. It's not the land I would have purchased if I were looking to build a dream home lot. It's not what it's about.
Now, you're not going to hear the surf crashing on the shores of Crawford. Yeah, maybe 80 million years ago during the Permian period, but not now.
Uh-huh. There is one thing there that's historic in more than just what Cindy Sheehan has done to make it a symbol of the peace movement. That's where the Chisholm Trail ran through. It ran through a great part of the West, but on that property, the Chisholm Trail used to exist.
I'll be darned! I had no idea. Well, so you know, you've got a job in front of you, and for folks that are just listening, who are hearing this story for the first time, are you going to be setting up a website? How can people get involve themselves? How can they empower their own native activism to help out in
mentioning
this?
Mentioning that, I have to ask you to be patient to give me a few days to get my own website built up to accommodate this part of what I'm trying to do, and that will be BreeWalker.com. But at the moment, Brad Friedman at BradBlog, your buddy and my buddy,
yep,
has offered to set up an email account that will be BreeCampCasey@BradBlog.com so that we can keep my personal email account separate from this. And this way I can respond specifically to what people have in their expertise that they want to help us. We're going to need people who are willing to do surveillance. I have an idea where I'd like to put a camera on the property and do virtual video surveillance.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe people will buy a shift for a dollar, you know, a dollar for an hour, so that we can do the maintenance costs in a way that it's nobody's real burden. It costs about $1,500 a month to keep that property cleared and to keep a generator on it and to keep internet access there.
And so, you know, this is where I'm going to be looking for a little bit of help, some fundraising expertise. And we'll go from there. There are lots of good ideas, a pathway to peace I would like to build there and put the names of soldiers who have been wounded and killed in our occupation. So these are all ideas I'm looking forward to expanding upon and waiting for suggestions from folks who know how to do this as opposed to
well, I think
blonde on the line who's just getting her feet wet. I don't know what I've done.
You're just gloriously self-deprecating, you know that? Yeah, this is, you know, this is heroism as far as I'm concerned, because among other things, we know that Cindy financially devastated herself. I was talking with someone else earlier in the program. She devastated her entire life to step up and create virtually. You know, I mean, this is making bricks without straw. What she did, she made the anti-war movement.
She did, and the modern anti-war movement does have Cindy Sheehan's face attached to it. It was not something she asked to be mantled with, if you will. It was something that she ended up doing because she felt the passion. She had to do something to handle her grief and to say that this was a needless way for her son to die. And as such, she became the face. And then she took a lot of grief, and there's been terrible things said about her.
Well, there were terrible things said about her.
Up and spit out, really, by a lot of people, both on the right and left.
Precisely, and that's one of the things that I find most galling out of this process is that our own side, or people who considered themselves on our own side, engaged in some of this destructive conduct. I don't know how you do that to somebody like Cindy. You know, maybe she's not strategically where you think she ought to be, but that doesn't mean that you come out and attack her for what is fundamentally the right idea.
No, I agree. It's a shame that people felt like they had to do that. It was a shame people felt like they had to call her an attention seeker. And, you know, the truth of the matter is she spoke her heart honestly. Not always with professional polish, but with absolute compassion and a total passion for the truth.
Well, had she had...
Sometimes the truth looks ugly when you just spit it out as opposed to have a public relations firm designing it for you, you know?
Right, and I think the American people have come to expect that level of polish from what many people call AstroTurf organizations. Cindy was pure grassroots, no AstroTurf, no polish, the raw grief of American anguish, and I think a lot of people attacked her, Bree, because they didn't like being presented with that reality. They like their reality like they get their reality TV shows, you know, where it's, you know, some editor's been over it and sanitized it and cleaned it up a little bit. This was with the current onslaught, the occupation, the invasion. This was the first time that the American people saw the face of anguish and the face of sorrow and the face of grief. And bless her heart, Cindy refused to pretty it up for the people who she was trying to reach, because, you know, there was a group of people who were predisposed. I assume that you were probably in it. I was. Several others were predisposed to know that this war was wrong. We didn't need convincing. We didn't, frankly. We weren't the people that Cindy was out there to reach. She needed to reach people. She needed to reach the guy who works at the Jiffy Lube. Okay. She needed to reach the lady working at the florist.
And she took it to a geographically hostile place, and that takes cojones.
Amen. Amen. To live in a ditch for how many months?
Yeah.
It was a ditch.
Yes. And the whole last year, she spent much of the time in the hospital, a direct result of the exhaustion and the wearing herself thin with trying to keep the message true and unglossed.
And, you know, for people to turn around and then say that she was an attention seeker or what, I don't buy it in the least. But I'm glad you did.
Historically, we find that anytime somebody decides that they want to speak truth to power, you know this to be true, Bob. When you do that, you are Velcro for evil thinkers and evil talkers. you just make yourself a target. So I guess I have to get ready too, and I feel up to the task. I mean, I've had people on chat rooms saying things like, Walker, Texas stranger, what the hell does she know? You know, well, here's my response. My three-word response is, Walker, Texas danger, look out. You think Cindy was tough to deal with?
Well, you know, you'll be
rabid dog here.
You'll be interested to know, Bree, that I'm hearing from one of our very good friends, a listener in Texas, who says, first of all, yeah, it's mostly flat with some very small hills and 103 degrees in the shade. So, you know.
But I hear the nights are beautiful.
Absolutely. And he also tells me that there are a lot of good Democrat farmers who'll do the upkeep on the land for free.
Oh my God, that's fantastic!
You know, that's the kind of activism that happens here on the Horn. You know, we're trying to reinvent talk radio here. We call it conversation radio, and this interaction happens constantly with what we do here. So, you know, if you tap into the progressive base, and there is one in Texas, and they're all over, I think you'll have a lot of support, and I think you'll have a lot of help. Of course, power bills and internet bills and things like that that don't go for free. But if you, you know, if you, it's kind of like building a baseball field in Iowa. If you build it, they'll come. And
that's what I'm praying for. And it's really nice to hear that you've already got some response from Texas, because not knowing much about Texas outside of Austin, which is impressive.
Austin is paradise.
You need to assume that you aren't going to be surrounded by friendly attitudes, but that assumption is dangerous for you and me, because it turns us into asses, right? And from what I hear from Cindy and Dee Dee, her sister, and the folks at Code Pink that I was talking to earlier today, there are lots of people who really want to be part of an anti-war movement that is pro-troop, because frankly, there's nothing more pro-troop than to get them out of that illegal occupation.
Exactly. Exactly. You want to support the troops, bring them home, and let them be with their wives, their husbands, their sons, their daughters, their mothers and fathers.
Protect us on our turf when we need it. I mean, we are creating nothing but insurgents on our own ground when we're not wanted where we are illegally occupying civilian territory.
And, you know, what do you say when the Iraqi parliament passes a resolution that says, get out?
Bingo. Bingo. That's right.
Because I remember when George stood up, Bree, he stood up and he says, when the Iraqis ask us to leave, we'll leave. Well, they've asked.
That's right. Hello?
Yeah, call the bellman, get the luggage.
Mm-hmm. Maybe a little too much of that near beer lately, huh?
Hey, Bree, it's been a pleasure making your acquaintance. I hope we'll hear from you again. Let us know how the whole project goes. We want to help.
Well, thank you.
So anything we can do to raise awareness, please consider us a friend.
I appreciate that, Bob. And again, for the moment, until I get more of a website built specifically for this purpose, Brad Friedman at Brad Blog has been kind enough to set me up with BreeCampCasey@BradBlog.com. So if you have folks who want to get involved, this is the place to go for now.
Wonderful. Best of luck with it, and please keep us posted on it, Bree.
It's just my privilege to be able to do this, and I look forward very much to developing an affiliation with your listeners. Sounds like you are so plugged in. I need you.
we'll do what we can. We sure will.
Great. Thank you, Bob.
Take care.
God bless. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bree Walker, and of course I messed it up. She is on KTLK 2 to 4 p.m. Pacific time, Saturdays, and she is quite a profile in courage in her own right. If you want to check her out on Wikipedia, she has fought a hell of a battle in her own right in her own life. So I think it's probably natural that she came to this fight, and she came to Cindy Sheehan's aid in Cindy Sheehan's hour of need. Well, we did another hour. We'll be back, and in the next hour, we'll be talking with Greg Palast. I think we've gotten it all worked out. Agnes is such a little miracle worker, and I just stand at the pump and say water. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. You're listening to The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. A federal appeals court has ruled against the Bush administration over the detention of a man accused of being an Al-Qaeda agent. The court ordered the man released. He had not been charged and was being held in solitary confinement at a military facility since 2003. On Capitol Hill, the Senate is considering a formal debate on a no-confidence vote on Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez. President Bush dismissed the vote as a waste of time, while the top Republican on the Senate Judiciary Committee, Arlen Specter, says he will vote a resounding no-confidence in Gonzalez. The president returns to Washington this evening. Tomorrow he'll go to Capitol Hill to try and revive the stalled immigration bill. He vowed that the legislation will pass, saying, "I'll see you at the bill signing." The UK's future Prime Minister, Gordon Brown, arrived in Baghdad this morning to meet with Iraqi officials. Britain, America's staunchest ally in Iraq, has already begun withdrawing its troops. A suicide bomber who collapsed a main highway bridge south of Baghdad killed three U.S. soldiers. Three more American troops were killed in other incidents over the weekend. Other violence killed at least 50 Iraqis. And Kuwait says it would not permit the U.S. to use its bases for an attack on Iran. The statement came after Connecticut Senator Democrat Joseph Lieberman suggested the U.S. military should use airstrikes on militant training camps in Iran. In Gaza, rival Palestinian forces continue fighting. This morning, gunmen targeted the prime minister's house. When the parliament building was attacked, lawmakers fled and legislative meetings were canceled. Mortar shells killed two Red Cross workers in Lebanon near a Palestinian refugee camp. It's thought that Fatah Islamic militants fired the shells. In a unanimous decision today, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that tobacco giant Philip Morris cannot move a lawsuit from Arkansas State Court to federal court, where awards are usually smaller. The suit filed by cigarette smokers accuses the company of fraudulently marketing light cigarettes. The Supreme Court also ruled today unanimously that companies can seek compensation when they voluntarily clean up hazardous materials. The ruling says the federal Superfund law allows the companies to sue to recover costs. The Bush administration had taken the opposite view. You're listening to the Quality News Network. We have science and business news coming up next.
Hi, I'm George Lopez. In comedy, there are some things you can count on to get a smile. In healthcare, Shriners Hospitals for Children have a proud tradition of bringing smiles to kids with orthopedic burn and spinal cord problems. The Shriners offer world-class medical care to children absolutely without charge. At all 22 Shriners Hospitals, innovative research and teaching programs are combined with specialized pediatric services for one purpose, to improve the lives of children. For more information, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, having fun and helping kids.
There was this man who almost learned to walk at a rehab center that almost got built by people who almost gave. Almost gave. How good is almost giving? About as good as almost walking. As generous a nation as we are, sometimes instead of giving, we almost give. Don't almost give. Give. Visit our website at don'talmostgive.org. A message from the Ad Council.
Parents who believe their children suffer autism due to childhood vaccines get their day in court. A precedent-setting case began today before the U.S. Court of Federal Claims. It says a mercury-containing preservative is to blame. More than 4,800 families have filed similar suits. The government's attorney calls those claims speculation. Both India and China will launch unmanned moonshots within a year, according to the LA Times. That while China's first astronaut says his country will offer an international proposal governing activities in outer space. No details have been revealed yet. A drug commonly used to treat high blood pressure could be effective against the progression of Parkinson's disease. Tests on mice at Northwestern University showed rejuvenation in dying brain neurons with the treatment. And scientists say the number of people with Alzheimer's and other brain diseases will quadruple in the next 40 years. One out of 85 people worldwide will suffer with the condition by 2050. The auction of a sword Napoleon wore in his Italian campaign won far more money than expected, $6.4 million. The buyer is unidentified. Light sweet crude is trading at $65.97 a barrel. At the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones ended even at 13,424. The NASDAQ closed down one, the S&P up one. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Laurel Christen.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
5.5 minutes past the hour, and we go downhill. You know, not downhill, but you know what I mean. We head toward the end of this evening's program. I hope you've enjoyed it as much as I have. A great conversation with Sansara Taylor, a great conversation with Bree Walker. Don't you admire what Bree Walker's done? I do. I do. I'd like to have that kind of money laying around to help out that way. But if we can help by getting help from others, then we're at least in the game. Now, the stars have aligned, the tides have gone out, all is right in the universe, and we have with us on the phone author and, frankly, America's best, greatest investigative journalist, Greg Palast. Greg, are you there?
Yeah, I blush, but thank you. Yes, I am here.
I'm so glad. God, you're a busy man, but I'm so glad to have you.
Keeps me busy.
It does indeed. Well, you know, as long as there's graft, corruption, and filth out there, you've got a job.
Yeah, well, that's a good way to think about it. Keep that filth coming.
Yeah, keep that fraud, waste, and abuse in the pipeline. You have come out with the paperback edition of Armed Madhouse, and it's not just a rehash of the hardback, which was stunning in its own right, and we discussed it a year or so ago. You've added to it, you've built into it, and made it so much more than it was to begin with. What have you been doing in the intervening year?
Well, it's what they've been doing.
Yeah, see?
Like you say, the filth and the fraud continue it. And I've added three little chapters to Our Madhouse. One is called The Theft of 2008, because everyone asked me, well, you wrote how they stole 2000, you wrote how they stole 2004, are they going to steal 2008? No, they've already stolen it. And I'll explain how. But then I have another little edition of that called How to Swipe Back Your Vote. And then on top of that, a chapter called Busted, how the White House drowned New Orleans, and it's called Busted because I was working on that new chapter. I was charged with violating the Patriot Act by the Department of Homeland Security while I was working for BBC.
Oh yes, I remember that. Greg Palast, a notorious evildoer.
Yeah, well, well, they said I was filming critical infrastructure because I was filming. You know, we still have 89,000 families down there in that kind of tin can Guantanamo that they've created for Katrina survivors. I was filming that, and we've stuck thousands of them under the Exxon, literally under the plume, the toxic plumes of the Exxon refinery in a place called Cancer Alley. I kid you not. I'm filming that, and they busted me. They charged me with violating the Patriot Act because they said I was filming critical infrastructure. I said, well, what's that? I said, well, any major polluting facility owned by a Bush donor. Well, I made that one up. But they really did charge me. They didn't. It's not true they arrested me, however, they couldn't find me. Now, keep in mind, these are the guys looking for Osama bin Laden.
Right.
And they couldn't find Greg Palast for 2 weeks. And Bob, I'm on the radio. I'm on radio. I'm on TV.
You go to the website and you're out there telling them where you're going to be. I'm looking here. You're going to be in Tampa, for God's sakes.
So, yes. So you know, there you go. So
they couldn't find Tampa.
So and that's another thing. I do have a chapter in the book, "Who's Afraid of Osama Wolf?" About the kind of slaps. Everyone talks about the horrendous, monstrous violations of civil liberties. I'm as much concerned that these guys are incompetent. There is not a trade-off here between civil liberties and safety. These people aren't safe. We're not safe with these people around. They can't find Greg Palast. You know, I'm listed, man.
Well, Greg, you know, that's a question. We go back and forth on this program a lot. Are they evil geniuses or are they common street thugs?
Well, they certainly aren't evil geniuses. They're not the sharpest knives in the drawer. After all, one of the things, as I point out in the new edition of Armed Madhouse, they're looking around for Karl Rove's missing emails. He claims that that they're missing, that his office emails are missing because, you know, the cleaning lady hit the delete button by accident when she was at the RNC National Committee. In fact, I've got 500 of those, and I mentioned that in our manifest, but last week I actually turned them over to Chairman John Conyers of the House Judiciary Committee because he certainly had an interest in those. And the reason, of course, they keep this stuff, you know, that they said that it didn't exist is that they don't want you to see it. This stuff is pretty evil. But on the other hand, I did get it, and because not one of my more fun catches, it wasn't your usual envelope in the middle of the night that arrived. It was we had a friend, a jokester named John Wooten, who set up a website, georgewbush.org. They're evil little internal missives between the various rove bots as to georgewbush.com. They misaddressed a few of those letters to .org to the wrong email address. Zip, we got them. I mean, went to Wooten. He passed them to us at BBC Television. And the rest is, I hope, history will be indictments because what we found there were the actual plans for shoplifting the election. And you know what? That's against the law.
Last I checked...
on the other hand, you have to be busted by the Justice Department, since at the moment all we have is an injustice department. It's a little bit difficult. And in fact, what's worse is that who perpetrated this crime? If you look in at page 207 of our Madhouse, you'll see an email, one of the missing emails, by Rove's right-hand man, Tim Griffin, talking about something called caging lists. And
I know that name from somewhere.
And Tim Griffin, indeed, you got it, man. You sniffed it out, Bob. It is the Tim Griffin, until last week, was the United States Attorney for Arkansas. When they fired the honest attorneys, they put in the vote fixer, Tim Griffin, in Arkansas. So the perpetrator of the crime of the crimes became the prosecutor. So how is the Justice Department going to bust him? Is he going to read himself his rights, put himself up against the wall? I'm not quite sure how that works.
I want a blindfold.
But I have to say that after I put the stuff in our Madhouse, then Monica Goodling, the little blondling who was the Gonzalez's assistant, said my superiors were perjuring themselves before this committee by not saying that Tim Griffin knew about caging voters. Caging voters, by the way, is a way to knock off, to eliminate the rights of legal voters. You're not, that's a no-no. That's a felony. And so what happened was the perpetrators became the prosecutors. But when Conyers heard her say that, he knew exactly what she's talking about because he's read my book. And so he said, aha, now I can move in. He asked me for he asked BBC Television for all the Greg Palast info on the Rove people and the Rove emails. Within hours of our announcing we would turn that over to Conyers, Tim Griffin resigned. So as of past Friday, he's an ex-prosecutor. But I talked to Chairman Conyers. He said he can be ex all he wants. He can resign. That doesn't mean that he can't be subpoenaed.
Well, of course, and it also doesn't mean that he has, by resigning, somehow assigned himself, unless, you know, God knows these guys wouldn't put it past him, unless somehow before resigning he offered himself and accepted immunity.
Right. Well, that's the other thing, is that, of course, the only reason he would be offered immunity is if he's willing to say the magic words, which is that Karl Rove knew about it. Now, here's the deal. If you look in our Madhouse at 207 at that email, the term used for the voter operation is called caging. When Goodling was asked a single question about it, she was asked, what is caging? Because it was confusing. It's a direct mail term. And by direct mail, she didn't mean the Chippendales dancers.
No.
She meant, you know, people who do junk mail for a living would know what the term caging is. Well, Tim Griffin, the U.S. prosecutor, was a military lawyer. He doesn't know direct mail or caging from a hole in the ground.
No, these are all learning curves he would have to.
But who owned a direct mail junk mail business before becoming advisor to the president?
Would that be a little rotund man with round glasses, kind of doughy, Rove?
Karl Rove,
yeah,
exactly. And so, closing in, that's the game. And so, it's getting closer. Now, of course, when Rove outed the name of the CIA agent Plame, they handed us Libby to lock up. Now, as the prosecutors have been, the honest prosecutors fired and the perpetrators put in position, they're handing us Gonzalez, the glove puppet, to have no confidence in. Well, I mean, whoever had confidence in him, I don't have to.
Well, this is. I mean,
but it's not Gonzalez, is it? He's just the glove puppet.
Well, he's a the glove puppet. He's a tool. He's a creature. I mean, I think we described him the other night as Renfield, if you recall your Dracula. You know, just sitting in the corner eating bugs for Karl Rove and George Bush.
Right.
Let me ask you, Greg. The caging thing is complex. It is a term of art, and it's something that takes a little while to get your head around. Is there?
But you can explain it.
Is there a short form explanation?
Sure.
Please?
What they're doing is they're claiming caging, which. You know, I outed this story. It's often difficult because I have to do things which are sometimes complex. But in fact, actually, the operation is a simple, stupid trick. You send letters to voters knowing they won't be home, that they won't be at their home address. Homeless men who don't have really a home address, they just register out of shelters.
Soldiers, sailors.
Vacation. And then ultimately, the creepiest one was soldiers. Now, why wouldn't the soldier be home? Because, Mr. President, unlike you, they have been sent abroad to serve their country. And so you go to Iraq, and they send a letter to someone who's not there, like a soldier. It comes back, that's the term caged, when it comes back. It comes back, and they then go to their cronies, at the county elections offices, and they say, okay, these people are fraudulent voters, and they challenge their vote. They may lose their registration. Or in the case of soldiers, when they send in their absentee ballot, they're on a challenge list. They actually lose their vote and don't know it. The absentee ballot is challenged and not counted. They don't even know they've lost it. And it's not small stuff. There are 70,000 voters caged in Florida alone. I mean, we look like it did. We don't know how many states, but from their emails, it was several swing states. And we do know that the challenges definitely bent Ohio, definitely bent New Mexico, which would have gone to Kerry otherwise.
And there's no way to find this out before the fact, really, is there? I mean,
some cases where they challenged a voter's registration. In one state, and actually, ironically, in Ohio, there was some ability to challenge beforehand, but that was the only state. That's one of the reasons they kept it quiet, because a lot of these people were jumped on election day. Even if they showed up at the polls, you'd have some pimply Republican kid in a snap-on tie with a BlackBerry with their names on a place like Wisconsin.
Let me guess, black precincts?
Yeah. Oh, ha ha. See, that's the trick. It's not just any soldiers. It was minorities in particular. These things are concentrated completely in minority precincts. That's ticket. And by the way, that's another reason why it's illegal. Because, first of all,
it's race-based.
Yeah. If it's race-based, that's against the law. You cannot issue racial challenge. By the way, even if there's a basis for the challenge. But in this case, then you have something called mail fraud, and you've got 70,000 counts of mail fraud. This is serious stuff. I used to do racketeering investigations for the government. He used to put people...
This is hair-raising, Greg.
He used to put people, up the river for stuff like this.
I'm a child of the Cold War and stuff, and this is the kind of stuff that we, you know, you tune in Walter Cronkite on a Thursday evening, and they're telling you stories about, you know, how there's no such thing as a real election in the Soviet Union.
Right.
This is that.
Well, except that in the Soviet Union, the difference is that in the Soviet Union, no one believed that it was a free election. The terrible thing about America, the sad thing, is that we believe we have free elections, we believe we have a free press, and these types of fantasies are, in a way, the most damaging.
Because they keep people from finding it. I mean, what you're telling me right now, for all I know, and for all anybody listening knows, their vote could have been challenged on Election Day, and to this day they don't know it.
Right. And they lost their absentee. For example, you mail so many people go postal. They say, "Oh God, they're gonna monkey with my vote with the computer." So you think that they're gonna that they'll go so far as to mess with the software, but then you mail them your vote. And, you know, that's like mailing an auto thief your keys. There are 570,000 absentee ballots which were challenged and knocked out that we know of. 570,000, that's over 500,000. And, you know, and there's many other ways to play.
Gee, that's enough to turn an election.
And and only Oregon is the only state in America that will let you know if there's a problem with your absentee ballot. And that's why the Democrats won Oregon. So what's happened is that, you know, so people send in their vote and they just get eaten alive. Or if you're in a black precinct, you know about something called provisional ballot.
Yeah.
Now, 3 million, that's a heck of a number, Bob. 3 million provisional ballots were handed out in the 2004 election. 3 million people were challenged and handed provisional ballots. 1,090,000 of those were tossed out. And, you know, that was completely not covered in the United States press, that over a million votes were thrown away because of goofy. Now, this is where the prosecutor firings come in, by the way. If you read our Madhouse, you'll understand this. You've got 3 million votes challenged and 1 million votes thrown out. Now, the only reason that those votes can be thrown out is if they're suspect voters who might be voting fraudulently. Well, you got 1 million people voting fraudulently? It didn't happen. So what they wanted, what Rove wanted to do was have at least out of 1 million, maybe they could bust a dozen, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, places like New Mexico, where the vote was won completely on these baloney challenges, they wanted the United States prosecutor, David Iglesias, to bust these so-called fraudulent voters. Now, he is a conservative Republican protege of John Ashcroft. They thought, no problem, he'll bust them. And he even went so far as to hold a press conference saying, yeah, he's going to bust the illegal voters. But then they gave him, out of the thousands that they challenged, they gave him 150 names. Where they said, oh, yeah, you can bust these guys. And he investigated and even put the FBI in every one of those cases. So the FBI finally said, let's cut the baloney here. You're sending us on these chases through the mesquite for on baloney charges. You know, that what? A guy named Juan Gonzalez voted twice. Ever thought about the fact that in New Mexico there might be two guys named Juan Gonzalez? You know, so finally he just said, he told me it was completely bogus. That at a certain point he realized that these cases were bogus and that he was being asked to bring bogus prosecutions, just like the Soviet Union.
And at about the same time that the light was going on for David Iglesias, he was getting the basically the horse's head in the bed message from Pete Domenici, right?
Exactly. He told him about being woken up Sunday morning in his PJs with his wife by Domenici. He said, you know, you're going to bring, you know, it was 1 week before the 2006 election, you're going to bring a prosecution against the Democrat. He said, no. And Domenici just hung up on him.
Greg, is this system? I listen to this, and frankly, it's hair raising. It's depressing. Is this system salvageable?
Well, two things. One, it's not depressing because, in the one sense, that you have to lie to Americans, you have to steal the vote. I mean, I think I'd feel worse if Bush won the election, don't you?
Well, okay, yeah, sure, sure.
And the other is, can we do something? Sure. That's why I have an extra. Besides the section. The theft of 2008 and the story of the bust in New Orleans. I have a third little section I've now added to the new edition called How to Swipe Back Your Vote, because it can be undone. They've flushed out about 1.5 million voters off the voter rolls now. You may be one of them. There's ways to fight back on that stuff, and some of them have to do with just getting the word out, listening to this program, listening to you, Bob, and getting the info out, spreading it around, going to gregpalace.com, spreading it out, photocopying our Madhouse. By the way, I'm taking off the copyright, just photocopying and sending it around. First New York Times bestseller ever to have copyright. Now, the other thing is, there's simple things you can do, like don't mail in your vote. But don't wait till election day to vote. Every state now has early voting. Go in. So if there's a problem and they say you're a felon, you have a suspect address, whatever baloney, or we can't find a favorite, is we can't find your registration, or you're not a citizen, then you have a good week to scream and holler and get that straightened out, or they don't like your ID or something. So give yourself a chance to fight the machine, because voting is not what it used to be. You know, registration is no longer sending your registration, you're registered, then walking in to vote and account. It's more like Uncle Wiggily, where you have to go through the obstacle course to get through the briar patch to get your vote counted. There's a lot of obstacles. So there's a lot of things you can do personally. There's a lot of, and the more information, I got to tell you that they stopped caging in one state, in Florida, because BBC reported just before the election there, and the Republicans, under threat of lawsuits and threats that they'd go to the Justice Department, not that that would do anything, they backed off a bit. Then in and by the way, on after John Conyers asked BBC Television for the evidence on Tim Griffin, Karl Rove, and caging, within hours Tim Griffin resigned his post as U.S. Attorney. But by the way, then he announced hit the cover story from Karl Rove, because they don't want to announce that he left because he's trying to sneak away from a criminal investigation. He suddenly had to leave the post of U.S. Attorney to go work for the Fred Thompson campaign. So the Thompson campaign cover said, oh, yes, we can't wait to see Tim Griffin, until a reporter called up and said, obviously never an American reporter, because they never ask impolite questions, but a Swiss reporter called up and said, you mean Tim Griffin, the caging list guy? A few minutes later, the Thompson campaign called up and said, well, we're not quite sure we're actually going to be bringing Mr. Griffin on board.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned the Swiss
indictment.
You mentioned the Swiss reporter there, Greg. You know, it seems to me, you know, I hear this. I've read our Madhouse. I know what's going on. And yet, I'm still waiting for it to make ABC, CBS, or NBC's evening news.
Well, you're not the only one. Bobby Kennedy Jr., who is a voting rights attorney, and obviously with the name Kennedy, has some connections. He called the head of ABC News and said, how come this isn't on? This is really important. This is criminal. This is basically a crime wave out of the those around the White House who are fixing elections. Don't you think that this ought to be reported? It's not like Greg Powell is reporting from a pirate radio station, BBC Television, which, as the reason Kennedy called ABC is that ABC has the right to run all BBC film news films for free. So he said, since you got the prices right, how come you're not running this terrific story? And, you know, the usual, in so many words, they said, forget it. Never. Though I have to say, NPR, National Petroleum Radio, didn't mince words. One of their LA producers said, we will have on Greg Palast never, ever, ever. So that's that.
Ah, the dedication to journalistic ethics. Yes. You just can't beat it, can you?
And I was just bounced off I was supposed to be, I almost snuck in on the Diane Rehm show, this show that's on National Petroleum Radio. And then someone came and said they bounced me off, but then they had people get on the air and attack my work, but on this same show. So, you know, it's like, and Fox does that too. I've had guys attack me ceaselessly on Fox. I'm not allowed to get on to respond. So I must say, at least I'll take the attacks rather than the silence. So I appreciate, Bob, the fact that you even said things like, gee, this is complicated, I'd like you to explain it. Do you realize how difficult is it to do something like that on most American radio?
You can't do this in 3.5 minutes.
Gee, this is complicated, could you explain it? Forget it! You know, I mean, if I can't say, you know, Nicole Smith's fake boobies, then that's it. And beyond that...
Yep, Paris Hilton.
Yeah, Paris Hilton. That's it. Paris Hilton cries. Three words.
The dog. What about the dog? You know,
exactly. So, but, you know, and I don't mind those stories. It's just, it's the worst is the other junk. The worst is Mission Accomplished and there, you know, like we have, like all the other report we have in our Madhouse is the, you know, the secret documents of the, for grabbing the oil fields of Iraq and the role of big oil in that. Now, by the way, some of this is so grim, it's funny. I mean, there is a lot of weird humor in this, and I think New Yorker says our Madhouse is great fun, if you don't mind an electoral coup d'etat, illegal war, and class warfare and people drowning in New Orleans is a great deal of fun, but there is a, a kind of weird, dark humor in all this, I will say.
Well, I don't think you could write the quick brown fox jumped over the lazy dog, Greg, the way you write, without making it a little bit dark and a little bit humorous.
I'll tell you, you have to have a little dark humor about this stuff, otherwise you go completely bonkers. Well, I'm going to have to do this because I have to get actually. It's getting late in Europe.
Oh, I know, I know.
I've not got to get in a story yet, but I have to tell you, this is such a pleasure to be able to actually lay it out.
Greg, anytime you want to lay it out, okay? This is we're reinventing things here. We call it conversation radio. We're very serious about that. And anytime you've got one of those that's a bit of a Gordian knot, bring it here, please, because there are people hungry for information. And who are willing to, you know, this is not the Fox audience. We actually sit and think about stuff.
I like it. That's why I like it's the head-on radio network as opposed to the head-off television network that we've been suffering with. So I do appreciate your work, and let's set up another time. Take it easy, buddy.
Indeed. Take care, Greg. Thank you so much. Bye now. What a guy. We'll take a break. We'll come back to your phone calls. If you've been on hold, thank you for your patience. I apologize. But, you know, are you a little bit more informed? Are you a little bit more angry? Are you a little bit, I don't know, are you a little bit more inspired? He's right. This stuff should inspire us. It would be worse. It would be worse because I remember the morning after the 2004 elections when we were just sitting here rubbing our temples, you know, with that Excedrin headache number 672, going, where the hell do I live? What's wrong with my country? There's nothing wrong with the country. Sons of bitches stole it again. And that's not an accusation. That's not a claim. It's a damn fact. And it's a fact that is available, apart from a few other places, mainly here on America's Liberal Voice, the head-on radio network. With so many lies, you twisted my heart till something snapped inside. I'd like to give it one more try, but my give a damn's busted.
This is Bill O'Brien with a message that pretty much defines Concord University. It's from Emily Dickinson. There is no frigate like a book to take us lands away, nor any coursers like a page of prancing poetry. This traverse may the poorest take without oppressive toll. How frugal is the chariot that bears a human soul. Respect for learning, a mission to deliver education that touches souls, consideration to what students can afford, career rewards that pay dividends far beyond the dollars earned. At Concord, we've never crossed that important line between the business of education and education as a business. The first is extremely serious. It changes lives and connects with the moral and the spiritual. We're good at that. The second is no less serious. It raises ethical concerns, however. We avoid that. Concord University, the frugal chariot that bears human souls. Call the Concord Admissions Office, 1-888-384-5249.
Recently on the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
If you have tuned into this program by mistake right now, and you are a Republican, a right-wing Republican specifically, before this program is over, I do want to warn you, you're going to think that I'm the devil. You're going to think I've got horns and a red cape because I hate the Bush administration and everything they stand for. So be warned right away, okay? You're all warned right now that that's where we're coming from today.
Don't miss Guy James, weekdays, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, on the Head On Radio Network.
Brought to you by the Republican National Committee, George W. Bush, Maximum Decider.
We keep the evildoers down at Gitmo because they're dangerous. Terrorists learn better when they got panties on their heads and stripes on their backs like the grill marks on a ribeye. If we don't do that, they'll kill you. Because they hate your mama, and they hate your Bible like they hate your freedom. Fear. It's what's for dinner.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
This is Billy Shears. Do you remember the Kellogg's Rice Krispies jingle?
Snap! What a happy sound! Snap is the happiest sound I've found. You may clap, rap, clap, clap, but snap makes the world go round. Snap, crackle, Rice Krispies.
Well, this week on Foxed Up, you will be surprised to know just who composed that jingle and the band who recorded it. So join us this Wednesday at 11 a.m. Eastern with John Fox on Foxed Up. Right here on the Head-On Radio Network, The Horn.
Pops the sound, the best is missed unless Pops around.
This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
All right, now look, Fokker. I'm a patient man. That's what 19 months in a Vietnamese prison camp will do to you. But I will be watching you, studying your every move. And if I find that you are trying to corrupt my firstborn child, I will bring you down, baby. I will bring you down to Chinatown.
They won't let me sing.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. By the way, you heard the promo there for Billy Shears' segment coming up this Wednesday. I know who did the song, and I'm not going to tell, because I'm privileged. I get to hear him ahead of time. You got? But are you curious? I would be curious. And if you want to go over and check out Billy's most excellent work, it's a lot easier these days. Just go to BillyShearsMusic.com. That's Billy, S-H-E-A-R-S, BillyShearsMusic.com, to check out musical poetry and some of the best musical commentary going out there. Yes, Agnes.
And please announce that they can go and find Greg Pellis' book on our
site. Oh, yeah. Thank you. You can also buy the paperback copy of Armed Madhouse at the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com site. And if you'll do that, why, the horn gets 0.9762375% of a thousandth of one penny.
Thank you, Susan.
Thank you, Susan, for putting it up there. Let's go straight to the phones. I've had folks waiting for a while, and I appreciate the patience. Kevin is with us from Washington, D.C. Hey, Kevin, thanks for waiting.
No problem, Bob, anytime, but tonight I'm going to have to challenge your stand on monarchies.
Okay.
Let me tell you something. The top 10 countries with the best quality of life are all monarchies. Norway, Sweden, Denmark, Japan, Luxembourg, Liechtenstein, Finland.
All are monarchies.
All are monarchies. You can look it up. You know, they're not as out there as the British monarchy, which is what we're used to. But Holland has a monarchy. Sweden, Denmark, Finland, Japan, indeed, they have great health care, excellent social safety net, virtually no crime in comparison to the United States.
But, Kevin, is that a direct function of the fact that they have a monarchy? Or
No, they have a constitutional monarchy.
Right, those are all figurehead monarchs.
Yeah, and, you know, just like in England, you know, England still has a lot of progress to get before they get that level, but what a monarchy represents, being that, you know, my family comes from a country that has a monarchy, is more of a historic continuity with the country. It's like a living historic museum piece, you can say, where people will get in touch with their past. It's like a, you know, because people do need a certain myth to build in the.
But we used to have that myth, Kevin. You know, we had the George Washington who could not tell a lie,
yeah.
And we had Abe Lincoln, the rail splitting man, and then we had Richard Nixon, the man who could not tell the truth, and now we have George Bush, the man who cannot tell the difference.
Yeah, well. You know, unfortunately, that is true, but I'm just saying, you know, all countries need, like, a certain myth or folklore to, and it's all part of the nation building. That's just their way of doing it. You know, different culture, different customs.
Oh, well, you know, in any, from tribal societies forward, you know, somebody always emerges as the head man.
Oh, yeah.
Or head woman. I mean, I think of... Shawnee culture here in North America. All the warriors, all the braves, the war chiefs, yada, yada, yada. Well, they also had a peace chief, and she was a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And before the testosterone crowd could run off and go whomp somebody in the head,
mm-hmm.
they had to get permission from the ladies of the tribe.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, it's natural that some sort of power structure arises. But it's this idea of revering someone simply because of who they came out of when they were born that I find a little bit offensive, because I am imbued with that American notion of do-it-yourself and pull yourself up by the bootstraps and the American dream, and it's all available to all of us. And the thing is, what we're finding out more and more in the first decade of the 21st century, Kevin, is that that's a load of BS.
Well, you know, it goes back to... Again, and I blame it all on the 50s with Reagan being the spokesman for GE. You know, Americans have this lotto fever mentality now about getting rich and getting rich quick, and it has broken down a lot of our, you know, traditional values of, self-reliance, but also a communal society where just like the Amish who help each other build their own homes and farms.
Barn raising, sure.
Yeah. And, you know, so there has to be a balance of the two. You know, no philosophy is absolute. But, again, it's just one of those things where, again, we have so bit into, and it's progressed by every decade. First it was, you know, the workers wanting to become shareholders in a corporation like GE. Then it was, you know, Robin Leach throughout the 80s at that disgusting show, Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous.
Oh, I knew that we had reached some sort of nadir, Kevin, one time when I tuned it in. I said, we went searching for the most expensive soup in the world. We found it in Japan. Snake urine soup. And I went, what is this doing on television?
Yeah, you know, it's like...
And there's some portion of the American people who are going, really? Really? They make soup out of that? I wish I had the money. I'd try some.
Yeah. And you know, it is... And it's been going on, and it's like basically now the epitome is when you go on VH1 and see these people, the fabulous life of Arnold or Pimp My Ride and all this stuff.
Oh, do you know that if I walk into the room and that is actually on the television, I get real dirty looks from my kids. I turn it. It's not allowed.
Well, you know, my wife and I differ upon that to the point where I have to beg her, don't watch this, because... it's screwing with your head, you know. And people mistake, you know, for not having ambition. It's like, you know, people mistake elitism for living well. And most of these countries, like Norway and Sweden, their focus is on living, the general populace, the majority living well, or everybody as they can, because there's no such thing as a utopian society. Of as many people as possible living well.
And these are also, you know, it's interesting, Finland, Sweden, Denmark, all Scandinavian countries in which moderation is not only a byword but a watchword.
Oh yeah.
They're not going to do too much of anything. You know, the Swedes and Norwegians get nervous if they get too happy.
Oh yeah, that's why they need to go out to the third world sometimes and do reckless stuff.
Yeah.
You know, The only thing they may do is, like, during the summer, that summer solstice with a six-month sunrise thing.
Yeah.
They may drink heavily, which, one night a year, you're entitled to do that.
Well, one day a year, you know.
One day a year.
Yeah, and the day lasts 24 hours.
Yeah.
It's a binge, Kevin. It's a binge.
Yeah. But, America has really, especially in the past 20-some-odd years, since Reagan has come, really lost its moral compass on people, and it's not the leadership. I more blame the people than the leadership, because the people fell into this.
They bought the snake oil.
Yeah, they bought the snake oil, hook, line, and sinker, getting rich and getting rich quick.
Do you remember the Morning in America ad for the Reagan campaign?
I was young, because I was 8 or 9 years old.
Okay, well, it's Morning in America, and there is a shining city on a hill. And the thing is, you know, at the time that the Republicans were running that, trying to reelect Ronald Reagan or elect him or whatever the hell they were doing, homelessness was at an all-time high.
Yeah, well. Yeah.
The shining city on the hill was shining because of the wetness of bird poo on it, for all practical purposes.
Yeah.
It didn't exist, and that's what you get from the Republican Party and the conservatives. This constant looking backwards toward a golden era of Leave It to Beaver that never, ever existed.
Never existed, because look at the cost of what the Cleavers lived through. You had segregation, you had a threat of nuclear holocaust, you had a military-industrial complex that was just starting to build its power up.
And people think, I remember a simpler time. It was only simpler because you were younger and you weren't having to carry it on your back.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And there was a lot of denial, There was a lot of denial of the truth that there were homosexuals, and people did have more than one lover in their lifetime.
And people suffering for the honest lives that they wished they could lead but couldn't.
Yeah.
I guess maybe I was somewhat mistaken in my earlier rantings, Kevin. Maybe it wasn't a monarchy. Maybe it's not a monarchy that so puts me off. Maybe it's an aristocracy.
Yeah, fame and aristocracy.
Okay. Because
and elitism. That's what it is.
I mean, to be fair, what does Paris Hilton contribute to our society?
Well, the girl can barely read a comic book.
Right.
She can barely read.
She does not have a high school diploma.
And she has this look on her face, and if anybody needs Ike Turner in their lives, it's her.
Oh, Jesus, there's the line of the night. You win, Kevin, you win. We can all go home now.
Because it's like she has this let-him-eat-cake look on her face, and she really needs Ike Turner to... You ever seen that movie Swept Away?
Yeah.
If anybody needed to be stuck on an island with Ike Turner, it's her for a couple of months. I really sincerely believe that.
Hit me again. I can put a little stank on it. Sure.
Yes. And, I'm not one for domestic violence, but in her case, it will do a lot of...
Kevin, you are the most reasonable man who calls this program, and I'm absolutely devastated by that line, okay?
Yeah. Anyway, Bob, that's all I have to say.
All right. Thanks so much, Kevin. Have a great night.
Okay.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye. Lord God, I've heard it all. If there's anybody in this world that needs Ike Turner in her life, it is Paris Hilton. Jesus! Who's next, Agnes?
David.
Hey, David, calling from Maine. What's up?
Good evening, Bob.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. I was listening to that, what Greg was saying, and... I was taking it in. I think he's right. You just have to keep saying what you believe in, no matter what, even if it all goes to hell. Just keep saying it, because at least you're doing something. I hate to be a downer.
Nah, you're not a downer.
But speaking of a downer, a Steve Earle show was on last night. It was the last one.
Oh, on
Air America, and guess what?
What?
Just as he was giving his goodbyes and salutations. And greetings or whatever, they did a Sinatra on him on Air America.
How so?
They cut him right off right before he began his goodbyes.
No.
Right to commercial. I was like, who the hell is running this station?
Look, I believe that there is a necessity for liberal and progressive talk and real conversation out there. I believe in it enough that we started trying to do it ourselves, obviously.
See,
I don't know what the hell's going on.
The reason why they got rid of Steve Earle, I know why. It's because he's not DLC enough, and he has a lot of people on. They don't know how to market or make dollars out of it. Well, whatever. It was only an hour. But, I mean, I listened to it a few times.
He wasn't coming into the studio. He was hooked up somewhere down in Nash Vegas, wasn't he?
Actually, Bob, see, that's the interesting thing. He moved out to New York to do it.
Jesus. Well, you know, I can't pay him, but somebody tell Steve Earle he's got a home here if he wants one.
Well, I'm sure he'd love it. I mean, he might need some help hooking up a mixing board. But the thing that I want to talk about before we go, I wanted to keep it light, was that they were playing songs that David Cross was selecting. And a lot of the stuff was like Mike Watt, and they were just going back and forth what they were selecting. And one of the things he selected was this lyric. And you tell me who said it, Bob. Thank you for listening. I write just for you. But others hearing this may find things they would argue. I do not sing what I believe. I only give them facts. If they believe quite otherwise, it still will have impact. For truth is truth, and if they then decide to live with lies, that's their concern, not mine, my friend. They're free to fantasize. Who do you think is arrogant enough to say something like that? A song.
Prince, maybe? No.
No, not Prince. There's somebody not in music, okay?
Somebody what?
It sounds like something Rush Limbaugh would sing. It has the same kind of meter, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you for listening. Now, get prepared to laugh.
Okay.
It's on an album called The Road to Freedom.
Oh, it's Sean Hannity.
No, it gets better, Bob.
Ollie North.
No, it gets better. It's no one associated with that. But then again, it might be associated with it. You never know. L. Ron Hubbard.
No.
Yes. If you go to Ron the Music Maker,
The Sage of Zorkon 9?
RonTheMusicMaker.org, you can listen for yourself. I tell you what's the funniest thing about it is these guys at Scientology, they bought a lot of different domains, like Ron the Poet. I think they might have RonTheChef.org. I haven't checked. Ron the Navy... The alleged Navy vet? No, that wouldn't be there.
No.
But one of the things that...
Ron the Landscaper?
One of the things I found interesting was they had a song called The Road to Freedom. And in it, John Travolta and Frank Stallone are singing lead with Christy Alley.
Oh, God.
And
you know, my favorite Scientology representation is in what was the Steve Martin vehicle that he did with Eddie Murphy a few years back? Bowfinger.
You know,
Eddie Murphy is involved in a cult.
You know who streamlined it the best is South Park.
Well, yeah.
They're 2 minutes on that.
Sure, yeah. Tom Cruise is in the closet and he won't come out.
And then they show the DC-10s flying in outer space.
Yeah, exactly.
And then the aliens.
Hey, David, I hate to cut it short, but people did it to me again. I got a stack.
No problem, Bob. I got the feeling we were running out of time.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
All right, later.
We'll do better next time.
Okay, later.
Bye now. Bye. Albert. Hey, Albert, what's up?
Hey, good evening, Bob.
How's it going?
He mentioned L. Ron Hubbard, and it cleared my mind, so I don't know what to say. But
What, did you, while you were on hold, did you have one of their little personality tests?
I don't know. Something happened. I just can't put my finger on it. But Ike Turner, indeed. I need Ike Turner after hearing L. Ron Hubbard's lyrics.
there's a place we all go where we all need Ike.
Unreal. So, I guess this is the end of this show, but... I love you. I'm glad to see you back, and
it felt like forever being away, and I hate going away from it, Albert. But these things are a necessity. We're trying to build this and trying to make things better, and trying to talk to people who can that we can work with to make things better and make things stronger. And it's hard to do it from the road.
I kind of remember what I was going to say, about Air America. I mean,
Ahead.
Air America has completely, in my opinion, if it wasn't for Air America, I would have never found the horn. But I haven't listened to them since for years now, and They're collapsing and betraying their audience just as much as the mainstream Democratic Party is doing the same to us, in my opinion. So, you know, they don't know what they got when they have it, and you know they want to have all this other nonsense, and you know, sorry to say, but you know, once they get into that realm of commercial.
Oh, pretty soon they'll be selling Sunday morning weight loss programs. I mean, it seems pretty obvious to me.
Was it the what's his name? I always forget them ministers confused the weight loss shake, the that Robertson shake.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Or you know, Sea of Galilee mud mask. Yeah, whatever. But no, I think that's where they're headed, and they're desperate to keep alive something that was that's operating on a model that is almost, it's not non-functional, it's dysfunctional. I mean, it's a business model that needs therapy.
You know, I gotta agree with you, and you know, I do wish. You
of course,
know,
far be it from me, Albert. Far be it from me to criticize their business model. I ain't got one.
Well, that's why we love you.
Oh, okay, just checking.
We're the anti-antis. But yeah,
no, we're brokering the Ten Commandments.
Yeah, well, hey, what are you going to do? Just watch out for them spaceships, and as long as you don't go to them for money, well, I think you'll be all right. So, but yeah,
I don't think there's any risk of you hearing any vacuum cleaner picking up bowling balls heads on here anytime soon, Albert.
And please never have Joe. You know, I know that. Everyone listening, no one's ever respected Joe Lieberman, honestly. And now more than ever, he has just absolutely lost his mind. He, you know, I know this is going to end it on a little heavy note, but he longs for nuclear war. He just can't wait to drop some bombs on Iranians, and it's just the saddest.
Come, divine bomb! It's like the end of Battle Beneath the Planet of the Apes or something.
It's awful.
You know, where the mutant humans pull the curtains aside and there's the old nuclear warhead sitting there. You remember that?
Yeah. It's and you actually, when you kind of mentioned that, and you made me think Battlefield Earth. I know. But, I don't know. It just popped in my head. I guess the science. See, that's what I mean. It's that viral Scientology just got in my head. I just
mentioned. Oh, you need a beer.
I got some, what is this? The Zinfandel right here, so.
Oh, okay. Well, that works, too.
Yeah, you need a little something sometimes.
Yeah, but, just to take the edge off. Because sometimes it's all edges, Albert.
It is. And, you know, like, and that's where, you know, where we got to turn. I mean, you know, not talking turn to alcohol, but, you know, in terms of where we got to turn for our media sources. And I mean, you mentioned Katie Couric and what she was blibbling and dribbling out of her mouth earlier about how the bloggers or, you know, the independent journalists are ruining the profession or just something along those asinine lines. I mean, these people, that they don't even realize, like, what they're not doing. And then they criticize others for doing it. And it just, you know, like, they don't understand, like, there is such, yeah, you know, there are the brainwashed zombies out there that, you know, will watch and care and all that other stuff. But, you know, I've been on this side for a long, long time, and all I've been seeing is the feeling that I have in my heart for humanity and everything else. And all I see is I see that more reflected more and more and more in you know, the rest of the citizens. You know, more and more people are waking up every day, and the more, it's like a chain reaction that, you know, the more people wake up, the more people wake up, the more people wake up, the more people wake up. I mean, you know, Air America, as we were talking earlier, it played its role, and you know, just like, you know, Katie Couric and those corporate media for a while, they played their role, but they're dead and they're dinosaurs and they're going the way of that. And, you know, hope it doesn't take 5,000 years, you know, just in a great flood.
All right, Albert, we got to roll out of here, brother.
All right, love you. I'll talk to you later.
All right, see you, man.
Bye.
Bye. That's it, everybody. Kind of a harem scarum night for first getting back, but I sure do appreciate you dropping by. Agnes did the wonderful job she always does. Our engineer is John Fox. Our IT professional is Peter Godbold. Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org is the hardest working man in liberal talk. No kidding. Liza, I know you're getting your shot tomorrow, but you can't be angst about it. You got to go to bed. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you. Yeah.
And we'll be seeing you all Thursday night.
Yeah, seeing on the radio.
I can see.
Yeah, I know you can. You're just like Romper Room.
That's right. Doobie.
Yes, you've got your doobie. Thanks, everybody. I enjoyed it. I hope you did, too. I will never again, for the rest of my life, ever have the chance to use that great Bob Peters joke again.
But it was perfect timing.
Guy walks into a barber shop. Bob Peters here? Nah, I just got here.
I appreciated him coming on, too.
It took some guts. But anyway, thanks, all of you. And I'll look to be talking with you again Friday evening. You get Agnes on Wednesday. You get a bunch of Agnes on Thursday. A bunch of reruns tomorrow. Sorry, that's how it works out. In the meantime, of course, our IT professional is Peter Godbold, also the future host of Strictly Confidential. All of our streams, our archives, and our podcasts are managed by Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal talk. Really. At WhiteRoseSociety.org. Ben never sends a bill. John Fox is our engineer in Sydney, Australia. And the United Brotherhood of Carpenters helped us get started. And we appreciate so much their joining with us to save the American dream. Liza, give your mother a break and get some sleep. And always, always, RMR, Gina, it's all for you.